Hey folks, it's Friday, so you know what it is. It's Sunset Lake Sebade time. Use code LEFT IS BEST for 20% off Sunset Lake Sebade. Sunset Lake Sebade grows, harvests, and ships all of its craft Sebade products directly from its farm in northern Vermont straight to your door. If you use the code, as I mentioned, left is best, all one word, you get 20% off your entire order at sunsetlakesebade.com. There's a lot of crap out there, not good Sebade that you can get on, the side of the road or at the bodega. Sunset Lake is the real deal. It's good stuff. You know that you can trust the products. It's basically a staple for me in my household. I'm looking at three different Sunset Lake products here on my desk right now because I've got the lotion that's scented that I like, but Sam says I can't use it. I got to bring the scented one home. I've got the unscented, and then I've got my Relax gummies, which I occasionally will pop right before my commute home. Sunset Lake wants to be your trusted one-stop shop for all your hemp and Sebade needs, and that's why they grow their own. They provide testing paperwork with every order, and they will help with any and all questions. Sunset Lake is a really great company that you can feel good about supporting. They have collaborated with us before on strike relief funds, refugee resettlement. They do third-party testing. They use regenerative farming practices. So you know the stuff is good, but you've also got a variety of different products that you can get. You've got gummies, you've got tinctures to help with sleep, you've got topicals for some sore muscles, you've got the lotion, as I mentioned, you've got the smalls, and they even have products to help your pets. If your order is over $75, Sunset Lake Sebade can ship your order for free. And when you can create an account on Sunset Lake Sebade's website, you can start earning rewards points and earn 10% back on all of your purchases. Make sure that you refer your friends if they're into Sebade and they want something to help, relax, to just kind of to help you sleep. It's a really great alternative for some of the more, I don't know, not as clean products out there that can benefit you in terms of your sleep. This is like, it doesn't make me feel crappy in the morning. I'm a big fan of Sunset Lake Sebade, and I know that whatever I'm ingesting in my body is good. So, sunsetlakesebade.com, use code LEFTISBEST for 20% off. Again, that's sunsetlakesebade.com. Use code LEFTISBEST for 20% off. And now, time for the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 29th, 2026. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Cedar, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live, Steps, from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, David Griscom, author of The Myth of Red Texas, host of The Jacobin Show, co-host of Left Reckoning, and of the new Substack, The Rattler, will join us to talk about the news of the week and particularly the Texas results. Got to get the Texas expert on for that. Also on the program, it's been 3 months since Trump started his illegal war on Iran, killing over 160 children at a girls' school, among many others. No update on that Pentagon investigation. Vance and Trump claim that the U.S. and Iran are close to a deal, which would be an extension of the existing ceasefire that the U.S. and Israel keep violating. Speaking of ceasefire violations, Netanyahu orders the IDF to steal 70% of the Gaza Strip. A New York Times Siena poll finds that two-thirds of voters under 30 are dissatisfied with both parties. And when you look at dissatisfied voters more broadly, 80% of them oppose aid to Israel. But these are the undecideds. This is the vote. Trump's CFTC asked a judge to reverse its own court victory against the Winklevoss twins' crypto company. Would you be shocked to find out that they donated to Trump's campaign, the ballroom, and are in business with Eric? No, you would not. Trump also scrapped an executive order that said AI might need regulation and they should volunteer some information, maybe, because David Sachs intervened, worried that it would be mandatory at some point. Trump's DOJ is also suing Massachusetts for refusing to issue confidential license plates to the ICE secret police. Pam Bondi testified to the House Oversight Committee this morning behind closed doors, of course. She says that her handling of the Epstein case was totally normal. Sam Alito's son has been quietly working in the Treasury Department, even as his dad hears cases involving the agency at the Supreme Court. Zoran Mamdani endorses Darialisa Avila Chevalier. Chevalier. There we go. I'm so sorry. I'd practiced this. But she's amazing. A former organizer of the Gaza encampment at Columbia. Tough primary race in New York's 13th district. But if Zoran's endorsing with a month to the primary, I'd love to see those internals. Seems like she might have a shot. A Trump-appointed federal judge gives the go-ahead to the administration's attack on mail-in voting. And lastly, at least 8 protesters arrested outside the Geo Group Newark ICE jail, where immigrants have been on a week-long hunger strike. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome to the show, everybody. It is Friday. Hello, Matt. Hello, Brian. We are without Sam. Thinks he's better than us.
He's gone Hollywood.
Yeah, right. I should give it back to him. Yeah. You know, when I go out to like promote the show and things like that, I'm doing this for the betterment of everyone involved. He's actually doing Hollywood things. Just when you thought his head couldn't get any bigger, now he's in show business?
Yeah, just piles into the Rolls Royce, says hi to his driver.
Sam's just going to wear sunglasses for the rest of his tenure on the Majority Report. I figured we'd kind of switch things up a little bit on this Friday because there's only so much we can do the back and forth on the Iran ceasefire with Trump trying to posture publicly about his position being stronger than it is. It is notable, I think, and I saw Trita Parsi make this point, that the Abraham Accords have really appeared at the 11th hour as these Iran negotiations continue, and the U.S. is feeling economic pain because the Iranians want to hurt Trump politically, and that makes total sense. I do think it's interesting to see the Abraham Accords come up again, because an insertion of the Abraham Accords into these negotiations that the U.S. is already losing is functionally a poison pill. Because the idea that normalization with Israel right now is in the interests of some of these governments, given how their population would react, I don't know, some stuff has happened since Trump 1.0, like the genocide in Gaza, that make things a little more difficult. So whoever's pushing Trump on that, I think, is deliberately trying to sabotage the negotiations on behalf of Israel. Something to just put a pin in. Trump and Vance are publicly saying that they're agreeing to this deal, but Iran hasn't said so, and they're the ones who get to decide. But let's turn to Maine here, because Susan Collins is worried. She's worried about her reelection chances. A few days ago, there was a poll done by the University of New Hampshire, And they released a poll showing that Plattner was 9 points ahead of Susan Collins, and 6% were undecided. So that's not good news for her. Not, you know, we'll see how the race shakes out. The primary is on June 9th. Obviously, Plattner is already on to the general. But he's had an impact on Maine politics more broadly. Troy Jackson is running for governor. And him and Bernie Sanders have rallied with him. He's been surging in recent weeks, along with Plattner. The other candidate was kind of on considered a shoe-in on a really easy path to the nomination, and not so much anymore because of the movement that Plattner is sparking in the state.
And I'd recommend going checking out Troy Jackson on Instagram. He's another, he's a logger, whereas Plattner's an oyster farmer, and it's just refreshing to see people run for politics that don't come from a legal background.
Exactly. This is what happens when you run a real candidate in Maine. And so it's Susan Collins is on the trail trying to maintain her position in the Senate. And she's got to be a little worried, as I mentioned, because of this. And it's hard to imagine that there could have been a worse response to this question than the one that Susan Collins asked. She was campaigning in Auburn, Maine. And this is what she said when asked about her vote to support the Iraq War.
Senator Collins, Mr. Plattner says that you sent him to war, but in fact, he enlisted twice.
Correct.
What is your comment on that?
Well, first of all, he not only enlisted twice after the war was started, but he also went to work for a security company, a controversial one named Blackwater, after his term in the service was over. So I respect anyone who steps forward to serve their country. But the fact is, that was Plattner's decision to serve. He was not drafted.
Thanks,
guys.
Hey, you know who wasn't also drafted? Literally anybody for the past 50 years. It's been at least 5 decades since there's been a draft. We've had a volunteer force for that entire time. You know, if only the soldiers just didn't show up, it's their fault for RSVPing yes before they knew what the party was going to look like.
If you didn't enlist, you couldn't be sent.
Exactly. Right? Why
didn't
they strike?
That was a planted question, too. Like, that way that was framed, because if you look at the logos on the microphones, that was all media.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, and this is honestly boomer mentality a little bit. Like, I mean, come on. It's your pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You made this decision. Don't whine and complain now. But the people that are swayed by that argument are already voting for Susan Collins.
Yeah. According to the Republicans, you're a man when you're 18. When it comes to joining the military, but you're not a man when you're praising Hitler and you're 40.
Right. That's how there's girl math. That's
right.
That's GOP math. I found that to be absolutely stunning. It's just incredible how I saw Sam say this, how she just completely abdicates her responsibility as a lawmaker. But really, what I also see from this is how cynically people like Susan Collins view their public service. What does this say about what she views her responsibility really is to her own constituents, which include veterans and young people that she sent to war? You wonder why people don't have trust in government. It's because there are supposed to be folks in the theory of representative democracy that you elect that have some semblance of like basic duty to you as a person and have their constituents' best interests in mind. Here, Collins is essentially saying, you're on your own under my leadership. You're on your own. You made this decision when you're a teenager. That's on you, buddy. And the Blackwater thing, he did security as a security guard in a diplomatic context. And he has spoken about how, as a veteran, it was really difficult for him to reintegrate back into society because he was struggling with severe PTSD. And Republicans pretend to care about veterans my entire life because they can be used as propaganda objects. But that's how Susan Collins really views veterans. Hey, you decided to go and fight in and join the force.
A war I sold.
The war I sold. So deal with it. You're homeless. You have mental health issues. You have PTSD. I mean, can I hand you some bootstraps? Here's Graham Plattner's response to her answer here.
Susan Collins voted to support starting the war in Iraq. On three occasions after that, she voted against withdrawing troops. On at least two occasions, she voted to fund the war.
That was Plattner's decision to serve.
Now, all these years later, instead of acknowledging that she was wrong, she's decided that she's going to blame those of us who in our late teens and early 20s signed up to serve our country. That somehow it's our fault that she and establishment politicians like her wanted to abuse our willingness to serve, to go send us off to fight in stupid wars that did nothing but make some people very, very rich at the expense of American taxpayer dollars. It's no surprise to me, because even today she continues to not stand up against the stupid war in Iran. She continues to not stand up against any of the abuses or the idiocy coming out of the Trump administration. No, the answer for Susan Collins is that she didn't have any power at all. Her votes to support the war in Iraq, that didn't mean anything. Those of us who put on the uniform, those of us who joined the U.S. military, it's our fault for doing that. This is very, very expected from establishment Republican politicians who love to talk about supporting the troops, but in the end, will always desert us.
Boom. Boom. Oh. I wish you could run for president. I really do. I know I'm getting ahead of my skis
do some things first.
I know, but I'm starting to feel hope again, and I'm not sure what's in the water.
Vodka?
Yeah, or just just proximity to Madison Square Garden. Here is Susan Collins, though, just to make sure that people No, first of all, how long this dinosaur has been in power.
This is October 10th, 2022.
Exactly.
2002, sorry.
2002, there you go. Supporting, this is her supporting the authorization for the use of military force for the war in Iraq, which, by the way, our inability to repeal that is why Trump has been able to wage the illegal war in Iran. So you can draw a direct line from Susan Collins here to where we're at with this horrible war in Iran. But here she is speaking about why we need to invade Iraq in 2002.
Resume work on nuclear projects in 1998. According to British intelligence, Iraq also has attempted to obtain uranium from Africa. Mr. President, this is extraordinarily troubling. Since Iraq has no active civil nuclear power program or nuclear power plants, it simply has no peaceful reason to attempt to secure uranium.
It wasn't.
In addition, the Iraq government has attempted to procure tens of thousands of high-strength aluminum tubes
Ooh.
That could be used in centrifuges designed to enrich uranium to produce the fissile material necessary for a nuclear bomb. How soon could Iraq acquire nuclear weapons? Well, the International Institute for Strategic Studies estimates that Iraq is probably years away from producing nuclear weapons if it has to rely on indigenously produced material. It points out that if Iraq were to acquire nuclear material from a foreign source, the time frame could be reduced to a matter of months. This is the scenario that the Institute calls the nuclear wild card.
Gosh,
I'm sold. Let's go to war for 25 years.
I was shaking in my boots when she mentioned the aluminum tubes. Yeah. Those must be manufactured in the same place where the tent poles that are sent into Gaza for people to be able to live in some semblance of shelter are manufactured that can be turned into rockets. That's what Israel tells me.
I would recommend people go to Frontline's Truth, War, and Consequences documentary, which is on YouTube, go about 45 minutes in. Or you could just check out the Wikipedia page for Niger uranium forgeries, because this this was bullshit intelligence that was kicking around, that the French were like, yeah, actually, we have a pretty good handle on that Niger uranium production line or whatever. That's bullshit, what they're telling you. But we wanted to use it to go to war. And we had a senator, people like Senator Susan Collins, go on day and say, this is a very difficult thing for me, but I just got scared from something that some intelligence says that it's my job to oversee. It's not the people who sign up to defend our country, even if, you know, people might look like, say, that's a bad thing to do in to the American military, whatever. It's senators' jobs to oversee this sort of thing and to authorize the war fighting for the executive branch. And she did it, and she should take responsibility for it.
And just to add to what you're saying, one, I think Plattner mentioned it, but David Sirota, the Lever's been doing really good work reporting on these Senate races, including, you know, we'll talk about the Michigan debate at some point in the first hour. Mallory, you know, the Lever has done reporting on Mallory McMorrow, really coordinating extensively with the Searchlight Institute and majority Democrats, which is supposed to be illegal, by the way. But I digress. The New York Times Siena poll that I cited in headlines has 43% of voters dissatisfied with both parties. And the poll also points out that it's been 25 years since Americans had a positive vision of where the country was headed in terms of the direction of the country. What happened 25 years ago? Everything is the war on terror. And we're still right now having these fights. I got into politics and was first fixated on it because I could not understand how any Democrat could support someone like Hillary Clinton in that primary because she voted for this war in Iraq. And that was in 2007. And it's why, you know, Obama was so exciting for so many young people. And we are still having this same fight because of how intractable this is, how corrupted our Congress is, and how these folks have been, through walls of money and campaign finance corruption, been isolated from true democracy and, like, the public really holding them accountable for the havoc that they have wreaked on the world. So much of this goes back to the war on terror, and I find it really inspiring to see Graham Plattner, a veteran, take his experience and move that and connect it to corruption, connect it to political change, and this is how we actually transform our society. It's just, God, it's been taking a long time. In a moment, we are going to be speaking with David Griscom, but first, a word from one of our sponsors. Did you know that around 20% of Americans say that learning a new language is on their bucket list? Well, if that's you, it's time to check that off. And Babbel is the language app to use. It's fun and actually worth your time. Learning a language with Babbel is all about small steps, big wins, and progress you can actually track and feel. Their bite-sized lessons fit easily into your daily routine and are also easy to remember. Just 10 minutes a day is enough to start seeing real results and start speaking with confidence in as little as 3 weeks. What's great about Babbel is it lets you practice real-life conversations. You don't have to deal with the stress. You don't have to think of, like, oh, God, is this like in school when you gotta do these conjugations? Oh, my goodness. It's practical. You build the confidence to speak when it matters. I used this ahead of my honeymoon going to Italy, and I was able to really use some of the skills, even though I was worried about the wedding, so I wasn't focused that much on it. So I crammed it in last minute, and Babbel was helpful just to get around the country and know some certain just easy phrases that give you the confidence to, yeah, not be the dumb American in every context. Or Canadian, whoever's listening to this. You guys are better than us, we know. However you learn best, by speaking, listening, reading, or writing, Babbel adapts to your style and keeps you motivated with personalized learning plans, real-time feedback, and progress tracking. Make fast-lasting progress with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works, and every course comes with a 14-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited time deal for you right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/majority. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/majority, spelled BABBEL.com/majority. Rules and restrictions may apply. Link down below in the video and episode descriptions and at majority.fm. Quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by David Griscom. Back, and we are joined by our dear friend David Griscom, author of The Myth of Red Texas, host of The Jackman Show, co-host of Left Reckoning, and somehow he still has the time, the writer at the new Substack, The Rattler. David, thanks so much for coming on the show.
So happy to be here, and thanks for the plugs there, Emma.
Absolutely. You have a new piece on The Rattler that is extremely relevant and was great to read prior to our discussion today. It's called Class War versus Culture War. Can Tallarico Flip Texas? I want to get to Tallarico in just a second, but let's just kind of reflect on Cornyn's loss. I mean, this guy was in Congress for decades, and it's an embarrassing loss for an incumbent. Like, John Thune was practically begging Trump to endorse Cornyn. And then Trump tried to leverage it into getting Cornyn and Thune to support nuking the filibuster for the SAVE Act, which is the voter disenfranchisement bill. And Thune doesn't want to do that because we know that the filibuster heavily benefits Republicans, the minoritarian party in this country. And the SAVE Act is, you know, I mean, could also hurt Republicans. That's another part of it. It's just so egregious. But Cornyn, like, kind of said, oh, I might support the SAVE Act. And hey, I'll name a highway after you, Donald Trump. But it didn't matter. Trump endorsed Paxton, and that's all she wrote.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there's a lot here that I think, you know, is kind of well-tread ground that Trump controls the Republican Party. But I mean, I think the way that you put it is perfectly right. It was a humiliating loss. It was a humiliating loss for Cornyn. Not only, you know, to be such a senior official to lose a race like this, but to lose against somebody who's just such an out-and-out crook like Kent Paxton. This isn't like typical, you know, Democrat slander against a Republican you don't like. I mean, this is a guy who the only reason that he still is the Attorney General of Texas is because they had a corrupt trial for him. I mean, you know, you have people on record saying they were getting calls for major donors, threats that they would drop $3 million against, you know, opponents in state Senate seats here. You know, that's just on the Paxton side. Cornyn is a fascinating kind of example of something in the Republican Party, which is it doesn't matter how loyal you are to Trump in the sense of your voting record or even your politics, you also got to kind of kiss the ring. And, you know, Cornyn was constantly going around Texas saying, I have like a 99% voting record in alliance with Trump. Like, that was his major tagline. And what we saw from Texas voters, I guess, is that, you know, that 0.8, you know, percent is too much. Once Donald Trump endorsed Paxton, it was totally over. And I think, you know, one thing that is interesting, and I think you're totally right, Emma, that, like, you know, some of the messaging that we had gotten from Cornyn on some votes in the Senate probably played a role, because when it did go off to a runoff, you know, Cornyn was initially up, you know, in the lead. And then they also floated the story that Cornyn was going to get the Trump endorsement the week after the first round of the primary.
Mm.
Obviously, that didn't happen.
Wow. And, I'm sorry. Can we just pause on that for a second? Because do you think that pissed Trump off? I mean, it's a very delicate thing when somebody's that obsessed with their brand. If you're trying to almost corner him, perhaps Cornyn's trying to corner him. I mean, that might be a real problem for him, and that might have been where he lost it.
I mean, it could have been, and you know, there's a part of it that probably, you know, to be as fair as possible to Mr. John Cornyn, you know, there's part of it that probably didn't even come from Cornyn himself, as we've seen so many people in the Republican coalition, the Senate coalition, have been begging Trump to endorse Cornyn and back Cornyn this entire time. You know, so part of it could certainly have been maybe Cornyn and his team, you know, overstepping there, but also probably Trump wanted to remind everybody in the Republican Party, including high-ranking officials in the Senate, that, you know, this isn't the grand old party, it's Daddy Trump's party.
He did, and there was the clip of him at the press conference yesterday saying that he doesn't care about the midterms, and he cares about the taking out people he feels have wronged him within the Republican Party and replacing them with more loyalists, as if a 99% voting record he doesn't really care about the votes. He cares about personal loyalty. That's what it is. No, you go ahead.
No, just saying, you know, you saw this across the board. I mean, obviously, Dan Crenshaw, you know, who for a while, you know, I remember having conversations with you and Matt about how, oh, man, you know, this guy might be the next big thing in the Republican Party, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, he's totally destroyed. Even Chip Roy, who I'm sure any time that name gets said on this show is negative. He got beat out because, again, he was seen as not loyal enough to Donald Trump. So it's not really about ideology. It is totally about loyalty and the loyalty that goes, again, even beyond just doing what Trump wants you to do. But constantly publicly kissing his butt. And again, just like on Paxton really quick, like don't forget, you know, Paxton has failed as an attorney general, not just by my standards of what I would like to see an attorney general of Texas do. He has, you know, let criminals and pedophiles off the hook. And while he's doing that, he's flying up to New York City to hold Daddy Trump's hand while Trump is going through his corruption trial, right? Like, that's the kind of stuff that we've been seeing from Paxton. And it's bad for Texas, but it's been very good for Texas GOP politics, for him at least.
It's I'm not trying to be too optimistic here, although I guess I'm in the mood for it today for some reason. But, like, Trump's record right now in special elections since he got reelected is not good.
Yeah.
Like, we should not be he's taking primary results as some sort of future evidence that the midterms are going to go well for them. You should be taking special elections as more of an indicator here. He has the cult down, like, on lock. I mean, they're sheep at this point. It's a cult.
They really are.
But, like, if there were some people that came out and were motivated enough within the Republican base to go out and vote for Cornyn, even though he had such a disastrous overall result, could you shave off 1-3% of those, not to vote for Tallarico, but to stay home? I think that's a real legitimate question here.
Emma, I think so. I mean, I think it'd be, for a lot of Republicans in Texas, it would take a lot, you know, to get at least people who really consider themselves Republicans versus maybe like likely Republican voters to flip for Tallarico. But yeah, I mean, one of the things that I wrote about in my piece, the Rattler, and I think one thing that people might be missing is that not only is this a kind of like humiliating loss for Cornyn, but it really is the death knell of the old Texas GOP. And let's not forget, like, you know, they did a lot. They took over the state from Democrats who had run the state since Reconstruction. They passed, you know, massive lawsuit reforms in the state of Texas, which were incredibly beneficial for a long time. Texas was the place where you would have those big lawsuits against tobacco companies, all those things, because Texas courtrooms tended to be more progressive, at least when it came to coming at corporate America. That was a major part of Bush and Perry and Abbott, actually, you know, of them kind of rising to power. So, like, they did a lot. And then they created a one-party state, a non-competitive state, a Republican state. But what we saw here is you have that old party, Bush, Perry, and all these other figures stumbling really hard for Cornyn. and it didn't mean anything. So what this really shows is that that old Republican Party is totally dead. And the big question in Texas politics is always, will the non-competitive nature of politics in Texas eventually allow that party to get so insane and so far to the right that normal Texans, not the very small amount of people who vote in the Republican primary, which remember, Texas is a massive state. You know, we're talking about a very small percentage of people who are voting in these Republican primaries.
19 million people
No, Texas is like 30 million. Yeah.
30 million? Gosh, yeah. What's wrong with me? Yeah, okay, then there you go.
Why'd I guess? You know, it's a very small sliver of people who are voting in these Republican primaries. So one day, you know, the question is like, they'll put somebody up who's so insane and odious to everybody else. And, you know, even with Paxton, so many people in the Republican Party, even though they might not be in power anymore, they were part people who like have loyalty to the old party, the party right. that is constantly getting humiliated, that is getting almost nothing, seeing all of their figures being insulted, seeing people losing office, you know, sooner or later, some of those kind of like county level Republican Party machines, you know, they might not feel like putting in so many resources to somebody like Ken Paxton, who is a crook not only against the state of Texas, but is a kind of a crook and a villain to a lot of people in the Republican Party in Texas as well.
Yeah. I wasn't hallucinating this. 19 million voters at the very least.
Excuse me. Sorry. Yeah. I meant population. Yeah.
That might be just the registered voting population, mm-hmm. but like, you know, I do think this is going to be a high turnout race because we've seen, you know, even though turnout was depressed relative to 2020, the Harris-Trump election was a relatively high turnout election. I know that's a presidential race, but people are really motivated right now because, like, gas in Texas is $4 a gallon right now.
That's terrible.
And Ted Cruz was bragging about that. And that doesn't seem like a really good strategy, especially with like all the refineries just, you know, in the backyard.
No, I mean, you know, I filled up the truck, you know, last week and it was like $95, totally devastating. And, you know, I guess we need to get some of those stickers that they had for Biden with Trump pointing at the gas yeah. prices saying I did that, you know, it would serve them well. I mean, yeah, when this was
shopped at MajorityReportRadio.com to get the Trump slump stickers, you're preaching to, you know, Sam. I wish Sam was here. He'd be beaming right now that you set us up for that plug. But anyway,
No, I think, you know, I'd be very happy to see some of those around town, you know, and like when it was like this under Biden, I mean, people rightfully were crying. Yeah. You know, it was a public outcry because it's expensive, especially for a lot of people in Texas who are suffering, not just because of high gas prices, because of incredibly increasing rents, property taxes, all these other things that have come again with 30 years of Republican rule. You know, it's crazy. And I mean, what is the argument for Paxton? What is the argument for Trump at this point? I mean, you know, we can kind of get into the weeds about what worked and what didn't when it came to Kamala versus Trump. But I think there's no doubt about it that most people were hearing an economic message from the Trump team. And I mean, the only thing I have seen is that basically like Tallarico is like a queer, is effectively yeah. what the Republican argument is. It's not even an argument for Paxton. It's just like this guy, you know, sucks and is a vegan.
This is a perfect intro to our clip that I wanted to play with you, but it's kind of an inversion of all of the horrible elements of the Harris campaign of like saying, the campaign actually did, there were so many things that they did wrong, but they were studious in avoiding her bringing up her gender, her race, and she was like, I'm a cop, I'm tough on the southern border. Mm-hmm. They weren't trying to do the culture war stuff, and I don't love that term, but it's hard to describe what this campaign against Tallarico is other than culture war stuff. But where they fell apart, as you rightly point out, is that Trump won the economic message, and there was a perception, of course, that Harris and Biden, it was a continuation of the same thing, and that they weren't interested in helping you. That's what the Kamala is for they them ads really indicated. It wasn't that everybody was motivated because they hate trans people. It was because they were worried about the economy and its impact on their lives, and that ad portrayed her as a cultural elite that is uninterested in your day-to-day pain. Mm-hmm. Now, Paxton is running on, like, Tallarico likes tofu. He's gay, but he also likes OnlyFans models on Instagram. We'll figure it out.
God has a big old hammer swinging his legs. You know,
right? He's not constantly thinking about God's testicles.
As your local Texas correspondent, can I add a little bit of insight here too to one of the ads we've been getting? So one of the things, and my sister pointed this out to me earlier today, but one of the main attack ads that they're doing on gender is that, like, he believes in six genders. They keep on saying that. I want us to slow it down for a little bit and think about
cisgender, right?
Somebody with a East Texas accent here. Yeah. It's like, cisgender. You know, sounds exactly like six genders. So yeah. That might be the origin of this here.
Is that, wait, you were thinking the same thing?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, good. Matt doesn't agree.
That's not where I looked into where it come from. It was like him at like a hearing, and like, you know, it's actually way more complicated. And there's not just two genders, like, you know, there's, and he said there's like as many as six.
Right, but I think like this is so Republican with the Democrat thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they're trying to almost, I don't know, muddy things. I just don't know if it's going to have an impact. Like people, I think, and when we talk,
if he doesn't get his back on the road and start doing what made him successful in the first place. You know, the past few days for Tallarico have been, I'm sorry, posting that little, I'm not worked up about it, but like the picture of him with the turkey leg or whatever, it's just like, all right, it's done. It doesn't do that much. And I think you're wasting your time getting yourself involved with that, which is the entire reason the Republicans are trying to get us to talk about six genders and vegan and all this other kind of stuff. And I really hope that they don't get stuck into it, because now that there is a race and people are excited about it because Paxton is the, you know, is the leading the Republican ticket, who everybody, even people in the Republican Party, think is beatable, or if anything is going to be such a drag on the ticket that like you might see significant pickups for the Democrats in the state ledge. Now Tallarico is going to have all of these new people who are showing up at his campaign office from the Democratic Party and national consultants are going to tell him, you know what, you need to go and eat a chopped beef burrito, which is something that David Axelrod said. I've never heard of a chopped beef taco in my life. But like, you know, all these people are just telling him like how to be a real Texan, how to be authentic. And I think he needs to ignore all that and get to what got people excited about him, which was him talking about the billionaire class, him talking about it's not left versus right, it's top versus bottom. Those are the things that won him the primary. Those are the things that have gotten so many people involved with the campaign, that are getting people to donate, not James Tallarico trying to be something that he's not. Because guess what? If you want to pretend and imagine like a perfect Texan Democrat, why don't we think about somebody like a football player? Maybe somebody who has six generations, maybe somebody, you know, who has like a deep connection, deep roots in the state. Oh, wait, that was Colin Allred. And they made him playing football seem lame somehow, the Republican Party. They're very good at this. We got to give them, you know, their credit. So why play this game? Because you're going to lose on it. And it, again, distracts from the winning message, which is economic populism, something that has shown time and time again to be very effective in Texas. And this is a good thing for Tallarico to, I think, pursue.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it pairs nicely with his overall affect of, like, you know, choir boy, church guy that is, like, gonna... You may not think that he's, like, the cool guy to go to the cookout with or whatever, because he's doesn't eat this meat convincingly, but you might trust that he's a good person. And I think, like, there's this cynicism right now that people are really sick of about public service and what it means to actually be a representative of people. And if he sticks with his message that he's been successful with here as, like, this kind of, you know, loving Christian guy as an antidote to the sadism of MAGA and also the corruption of MAGA, you have just a stark contrast. And so much about politics is contrasting yourself with your opponent. So I couldn't agree with you more, David. But to illustrate where we're at here in terms of the, I don't know, Tallarico is gay messaging campaign, Glenn Beck brought on our dear friend Dave Rubin onto his show as his gay correspondent. He's like, hey, you like dick. Can you figure out if Tallarico's gay? I'm going to outsource this to you, the body language expert for the gaydar.
Yeah, exactly.
You pointed out on Twitter, what the hell happened to Dave Rubin's face? I mean, he really definitely got a facelift, not to be petty about this, or something like that. And they yanked, they stepped on that guy's head and yanked it back.
It is, I mean, for people watching and maybe having a drink of water, eating, like, take a second, because it is, I had a jump scare.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy when you take as many vacations as he does if you want to have some recovery time. But here is Dave Rubin on the important question of whether or not James Tallarico is gay.
He's eating a turkey leg. I think this whole, what I saw in this is, here's a guy almost mocking.
I'm sorry, really quickly. we'll go back. But to your point, David, why did he pose for this? It's just like such an unforced error.
Well, I actually, you know, what's interesting about this photo, though, Emma, is that this photo actually comes from a good message campaign from him, which is he went to the Texas State Fair and he was noting about how expensive the Texas State Fair had become because of corporate interest. So it's like, right, actually like a pretty good video. But now they keep on posting this as his response to the vegan allegations. And it's out of context.
The Democrats.
It's starting to get a little silly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Democrats shouldn't have, like, let that be a frame in the video. You don't need to isolate it and post, here we come with our turkey leg eating.
This is the official Democrats account, which is why, to your point, the consultants, get out of this race. Let the Tallarico team do what they've been doing. Anyway, we'll restart it now.
Is, here's a guy almost mocking Texans. You know, this is what Texans really look like, so I'm going to pretend I'm one of them. However, Ricky, who is absolutely debased, she's not a good human being. She comes in and she's like, this is appealing to, let's say, non-cisgendered voters. And I'm like, what are you even talking about? And she said, your rumor is, you know, he says he has a girlfriend, yada yada. I have no gaydar. I think she's an abomination, Ricky. I think she's probably going to spend more time in hell than most of us.
Wait,
I'll just pause there, Ricky. Like, yeah, I think that's a woman on staff, but I'll just say, like, Glenn, you're a Mormon fundamentalist. When you use the word abomination when discussing gay people, we're not sure what you're talking about.
That's a great, great point. Also, he's talking all about, like, I looked it up. He's from the state of Washington, so I don't really get what Glenn's... And does he even broadcast from Texas anymore?
I think he's in Dallas, right? No?
I can't remember where
he's
at
but
now.
Yeah.
He has a girlfriend, yada yada. I have no gaydar. I think she's an abomination, Ricky. I think she's probably going to spend more time in hell than most of us. And in a deep
I've always
level.
Liked her, but okay, you know.
Well, you know, thanks to the tango.
What's hilarious. Your gaydar say on him, and what is there? Is she just going to hell, or does she have a point on this?
What? You know, I must say this is very strange. I got a text from Billy Bush. Broadcaster Billy Bush yesterday asking me about my gaydar on Tallarico. This is what the remainder of my career is going to be.
Wait, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
You dug this grave, dog.
Billy Bush, the
reflection.
The Access Hollywood dude reached out to be like, hey, dude, you're the first gay guy I can think of. I know I've worked in Hollywood, but Dave, you're the one I come to for the gaydar. God. All right, keep going.
Isn't gay? Well, I have a very long career in politics, but I don't know that this is what I signed up for.
I think it's exactly
look, I don't know if this guy is gay. There's obviously some weird stuff when he tells you that Jesus is non-binary and that there are six genders. And there is a slight effeminate
Jesus
thing.
Christ,
but
dude,
you know, Glenn, look, there are effeminate guys who are straight. And there are straight acting guys or masculine Correct. Guys who are gay and all of those things. So to me, that's not so important.
I feel
important
better
here.
About myself.
Yes, Glenn, as far, I've known you quite well for many years at this point, and I can confirm to the listeners that you are straight, as far as I know.
No. Exactly. I mean, I thought, I feel better because I didn't think there was anything to this.
Electric chemistry here.
And then Ricky comes in, you know, with
I thought this was... Yeah. I thought this was just a crazy ruse to get me to affirm
Glenn,
your
what are you trying to
get
me to say?
No. All right.
Yeah, I'm trying to howl for my food here, but you didn't give me a script.
What song do you want me to sing here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Glenn couldn't even take the slightest bit of like cheekiness from Dave about his sexuality.
No.
Glenn's like, I brought you on here to confirm to everybody that I'm straight and Tallarico's gay. Yeah. What do you get? Like, what are you not getting here, buddy? And why would you even joke about me being gay? Yeah.
You were invited because we needed a gay guy to call this guy the F-slur.
Yep. So. Right. And the tofu Tallarico thing is a little too subtle. I mean, when they call him a vegan, that's they're just saying, like, you're a queer, basically.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's such a insulting way as a Texan, as like somebody from Texas. Like, it is insulting the way that the national media is talking about us too, frankly, around this. It's like, you know, the only thing that we can think about is like barbecue. And it's like we're just like kind of like knuckle dragging, mouth drooling morons, you know. And I don't know, I at least for my, you know, it's just like, it is unbelievable the insult that the Republican Party and the right is kind of, this is the kind of way that like we usually thought that liberals were just speaking about us, but it's this entire kind of coastal elite class, which both Ruben and Glenn Beck are part of. And, you know, it shows that these are folks who are out of touch. They don't understand Texan values. And I hope that we can kick them to the curb pretty soon.
Can we just also play how Trump says vegan?
Yes, please. I've been looking for this clip. You haven't, Matt? Oh, yeah, my God. I love this.
I haven't heard this yet.
Oh, no, you're not ready for this.
He doesn't know how to say it. Oh, that's so good. All right, let's go.
I mean, this guy is bad news with his mask from relatively recently. And he's a vegan. All of a sudden, he's not a vegan. He's a vegan. Now, all of a sudden, he's not. Texas doesn't like vegans.
Okay, it's like he's saying he's a Vegas resident.
Or a pagan.
He's a vegan. He's a vegan, you know?
He
worships Thor. He's a vegan.
I love the conservative brain, too. Like, the things that make sense to them, like this guy with his mask from relatively recently.
Yeah. Well,
but you know that Trump has not read anything about him, because when we're talking about the mask thing, that's the other thing you notice in the ads, where they're doing the six genders, and he's in a mask in 60 to 70% of the attack ads.
He wears a mask.
Because he was
recently,
because God forbid, like he as a state representative was wearing a mask during COVID.
Yeah. And frankly, you know, these are all old clips again, too. You know what I mean? Which is why they think it's so recent. And I mean, you know, Trump's still, I mean, he's still good off the cuff. Ken Paxton has been trying out some names for Tallarico that haven't really hit. Low T, Jimmy has been one of them. Talafrico, I think they're making t-shirts with that one. You know, you can maybe.
That makes him sound cool.
I will buy that shirt.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Well, I mean, I don't know. Okay. I guess, can you talk about whether or not you think this has any salience? It's hard to say. I agree that the national media is treating Texans like they're too dumb to understand any of this stuff, but. Am I wrong to have the optimism that I don't really think Tallarico is effeminate is going to be that, I guess, motivating of an issue in Texas?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's the only thing that they have. And I think as long as Tallarico continues to hit these notes, I mean, this is like autopilot Republican Party politics at this point. To just sit here, honestly, it's even easier than in the past, because at least before they used to have a kind of like subtext for their insults. Like now they're pretty much all but, you know, coming out calling him a queer. And I don't think that that it's going to have very much salience in kind of pulling people away from Tallarico. You know, the fact of the matter is, in Texas, despite the dream that many people have had for a long time that there's this like kind of sitting mass of Democrat voters in the state, it's not true. There are people who don't vote, and we should try to win them and convince them of our politics, but they're not automatically Democratic Party voters, which has been, I think, the kind of fixation fantasy of people for a very long time. They are people, though, who I think are very open to things like economic populism, like dealing with the healthcare crisis, like lowering the cost of rent in the state, which is just astronomical. You know, meeting people on that kind of economic populist lens, I think you can reach a lot of Texans who either don't vote or vote infrequently or might even regularly vote for the Republican Party. And to win those people, I think those folks might not be dissuaded from Tyler Rico, but he has to go out there and make this kind of general campaign argument to those folks. You know, you also have, I think, an unfortunate thing in the Democratic Party, too, that is worth noting here. And this, I don't want to get too in the weeds, but just like every Democratic Party, there are people who want the party to be progressive, and there are people who want the party to be more corporate and centrist. They are worried about Tyler Rico because even though, you know, we might quibble, you and I might quibble about how progressive we think he is, where we think he can be better, he's running as a progressive. That's the lane that he's trying to operate in, as somebody who's talking about populism and billionaires and things like that. And there are people who don't want that to be the case. You know, so a lot of people, especially people who are like big time supporters of Crockett, have been advocating against Tyler Rico since he got the general election. So there's also this kind of internal fight within the Texas Democratic Party, at least with people who are influential around it, that he's also going to have to win. The state convention is coming up. Finding out who's going to be the chairman is going to be interesting. We got Kendall Scooter, the current chairman, who a lot of people don't like, but also a woman, Monique Alcala, who was the executive director of the Texas Democratic Party under Colin Allred, who was regularly advocating against journalists and attacking journalists for asking questions about why Colin Allred is not campaigning anywhere in the state like that.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of forces who, there's the things that are progressive and exciting in the Democratic Party. There's a lot of people who might want to claw it back. So, you know, there's going to be a kind of multifaceted fight in Texas. But as you know, I wrote a book about it. I think Texas is winnable. I think that there's a very clear path here. And I think, you know, leaning into that kind of deep Texas tradition of economic populism is something that's very exciting. And there's a lot of opportunity there. And, you know, I think Tyler Rico certainly has shown that he's willing to do that. And hopefully he runs this campaign in a progressive way and pushes back all the forces that might want to be setting him back.
Yes, and people should read The Myth of Red Texas for a lot of this. I mean, you open the book speaking about the Allred campaign and contrasting it with the Beto O'Rourke campaign and how Allred was, you know, not really going around the state. Beto O'Rourke did, but Allred was more focused on, like, TV ads, traditional Democratic consulting stuff. But Tyler Rico is going to every corner of Texas, and that's really encouraging. Just the way he's campaigning, regardless of like what we think about his personal ideology, is an improvement on many Democratic campaigns. Lastly, David, before I let you go, I am just like, we've had an optimistic tone here, but my big concern, and I don't think enough people are talking about it in the fall, is that Trump and Miller are going to send the ICE Gestapo to polling sites. And you're going to have a governor that's eager to collaborate with the administration on that for this to have the most impact. And in these really key Senate races, Texas stands out to me as the number one area where this kind of voter suppression could benefit Republicans, because you're going to have Greg Abbott as somebody who's more than willing to collaborate with the fascists in the White House to get ICE at these polling stations to intimidate Latino voters. As I mentioned, there's 19 million voters in Texas that are registered. It doesn't mean that if you're voting in Texas, you're legally allowed to. Voter fraud is infinitesimal. It doesn't happen. It's not a real thing. But it doesn't mean that people aren't going to be intimidated by seeing federal forces that are racially profiling them and might hurt. Say they have a family member who's undocumented, but they're able to vote. They might be worried about being surveilled by ICE. Like, this is a tactic that I think could really impact the race in the fall, and not enough people are talking about it, especially when you see this. And as you write in the book, like, the demographics as destiny thing is a total myth. But across the country, Latino voters are swinging back to Democrats in large swaths. And it doesn't mean it's replicable in Texas. But I think that obviously the administration is going to notice that.
Yeah, I mean, I would just note there, I saw you tweeting about this, and a lot of people, you know, very normal kind of Republicans were responding to you and be like, well, you know, if you're so afraid of, you know, of ICE and you're an American citizen, you know, you're delusional. I'm sorry, ICE has killed American citizens. ICE detains American citizens. ICE beats American citizens. They do not discriminate, and that's totally ludicrous. And there's a reason why we don't allow any kind of intimidation, especially in places like Texas. I mean, as I write about in my book, I mean, you know, one of the biggest things that defeated the populist and the progressive movement in Texas was the fact that, you know, white supremacists and gangs would stand outside of the polling place to intimidate folks. All of those people were American citizens and had the right to vote, but they knew that they were being seen. They were being that they could potentially face violence, maybe not there, but later. No doubt about it. I mean, any kind of mobilization by ICE is, you know, totally unconscionable, and it's something that, you know, we should take seriously. I think that, you know, the people to really think about this is the people in our city governments. And remember, you know, the places that they would be doing that are Texas cities. Texas cities tend to be very much, you know, Democratic. And we really, I know it's tough, and I always try to give people a lot of grace because it's tough to be a Democrat official in Texas. The Republican Party at the state and now the federal level is constantly waging war on them. But we have seen too much acquiescence from figures, like especially in Houston, you know, when it comes to collaborating with ICE, collaborating with the Republican Party. And, you know, if there is any kind of mobilization like this, it is not the time to be squeamish at all. So I think I tend to agree it's something to definitely be worried about and keep your eye on. And I think that the only way in the short term that we can kind of push back on this, like one with collective power, labor, but also encouraging our Democratic Party officials on the city level, especially on the county level, to stand up if we get these kind of fights. Because if ever, you know, they want to kind of end this experiment in democracy in this country, it will be when they start, you know, trying to threaten people at polling places. Absolutely.
Well, David Griscom, always appreciate being able to catch up with you. Author of The Myth of Red Texas, host of The Jacobin Show, co-host of Left Reckoning, which is co-hosted by Matt Leck as well. And check out David's new Substack, The Rattler, where you can read his opening article about this upcoming Senate race. The title of it is, I'm opening it now, Class War versus Culture War, Can Tallarico Flip Texas? Yes. David, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much. And folks, if you're in Austin on Monday, June 1st, I'm going to be at Batch Kalachi talking about The Myth of Red Texas with Alex Bernal at 5 Central. That's Batch Kalachi right here in Austin, Texas. So come and see me if you're local. Thank you so much, Emma, for having me. Last time I was on was right before my last book talk, and the room was filled with people who came from Majority Report. So it'd be great to see all those friendly faces again.
Oh, awesome. Yes. And you're on a world tour right now, or at least a U.S. tour to promote your great book. So everyone check that out if you are in the area. Thanks, David, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I'll take care.
We're going to just quickly, before we head into the fun half, since this is the Senate race casual Friday, I want to touch on this Michigan Senate debate that happened yesterday. So, another key important race in the country, in the Michigan Democratic primary, is in August. It's a three-way race at this current moment, but Mallory McMorrow is dropping in the polls. Somehow Haley Stevens is maintaining a certain level of support. It seems like a lot of McMorrow voters are like, I might just go with Abdul Al-Sayed. And this is how winning starts, when you get momentum and people think that you have the possibility to win. They are much more likely to support you. And this is important to when we're looking at broader momentum across the country for progressive candidates and even like Democratic socialists. Like Zoran Mamdani got people engaged who weren't even in New York City because, wow, this is what public service can look like. Wow, Abdul Al-Sayed is leading in the polls, and I like a lot of what he has to say, and I'm not terrified that we're going to lose to a Republican on this basis because of how insane they are. It frees people to vote based on their interests. And that's why the Democratic establishment has spent decades trying to convince people that the only way to win is centrism. The reality, though, is that people don't buy it anymore. They don't buy it.
Mom Donnie was the first time I registered as a Democrat so I could vote in the primary.
Yes.
Because I always felt like that was registering as a sex offender.
Wow. Everyone's clutching their pearls here. Don't say anything about how you voted for Jill Stein or something like that. We'll lose.
Oh, no, I voted Democrat. Yes. Not... I didn't want to register.
But to your point, like, people get squeamish about that, I think, within, you know, the Democratic Party primary voters who, you can understand it, who see Republicans as the existential threat that they are. The
problem is the centrists don't agree with
exactly.
them.
The problem is that the centrists aren't good at winning and they can't govern, and now people are realizing those things. It's just taken a while because of all the propaganda and the institutional leverage that has been exerted on candidates that are looking out for the working class. They've been kind of excommunicated from the party in many ways, but that's changing, and voters are not interested in it anymore. So Haley Stevens here, who is number two in many polls right now, despite her staunch Israel support, seeing Israel in her visions of the future. Yeah. She's a non-denominational Christian Zionist crying about Israel.
She's a real freak.
And somehow more authentic than McMorrow.
Yeah.
Because she's a freak in an authentic way. And not that I appreciate her or want her anywhere near power, but I'm more entertained by her.
Right.
And it's because McMorrow knows better. I know she knows. You can tell she knows better. And she's trying to stake out this, like, middling centrist position between the two candidates, and it's just kind of so obviously a performance and not based in your actual ideology that I think people are turned off by it. But this is a long way to intro this some of the clips from this debate. So here's Haley Stevens asked about her stance on the filibuster. And this is a little uncomfortable because within the same breath, she says that we have to use the filibuster.
Haley Stevens.
The people of Michigan deserve a functional Congress. And as someone who has been recognized by the Center for Effective Lawmaking as the most effective Democrat for Michigan in the House of Representatives, meaning I write bills, I pass bills on behalf of the great people of Michigan. I have also used my position and communicated very clearly that the filibuster is no longer serving the people of Michigan. When our voting rights are under attack, when we are on the eve of seeing a black man for the first time in the history of this country become the speaker, and they are erasing seats held by African-American men in the South, that is wrong. The filibuster must go. The filibuster must go so that we can codify health care. And by the way, Nolan, to your other good question about the debt and the deficit, we should use the filibuster to not allow the big, ugly bill to pass that increased our debt and at the same time eradicated
Michiganders. So we're not going to filibuster here.
So wait, you said you would.
It's a small thing. Before they tease out what she means by saying the filibuster no longer serves people and also we should use it. The way she even frames that, like, look, I think it's bad, like, talk about the people being disenfranchised this gerrymandering. That, like, your colleagues are losing seats. Like, that's like a second order thing.
That's exactly right. That's a good point.
And by the way, Nolan, to your other good question about the debt and the deficit,
sucking up to him.
We should use the filibuster to not allow the big, ugly bill to pass that increased our debt and at the same time eradicated
Michiganders.
So we're
not going to filibuster here.
So wait, you said you would get rid of the filibuster, but you also want to use it. Which one is it?
I said I want to remove the filibuster.
Right, but then you just said you should filibuster what's going on with the deficit, right?
I'm saying that I want to change the rules of which I've been a part of. I voted for rules packages on behalf of the people of Michigan, and I believe Stephen, what I said is we should remove the filibuster so Democrats could have voted down the legislation, the tax bill. That's what I was saying. Democrats should have been able to vote down the tax bill, Stephen. That's why I said we need to get rid of the filibuster.
Girl.
That tax bill should not...
It's so uncomfortable. It's so uncomfortable.
Especially because she's wearing 1990s NFL shoulder pads. It's like Charles Haley.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was the sleeve length for those uniforms, too, right? Okay, so I don't understand. She's a member of Congress. She's won in a purple district. That's why Chuck Schumer was enamored with her, plus the whole, you know, AIPAC candidate thing. Girl, you understand that the filibuster was bypassed via reconciliation to pass the big, ugly-ass bill. Like, that's kind of pretty important to understanding how the Senate functions, that there's an exception for bills that are related to taxing and spending and the budget. That's...
Yeah, it's famously how Obamacare got through and B-Day filibuster. It didn't have to, got to avoid a filibuster because it was in the resolution.
What she, I think, was trying to say is that if we get rid of the filibuster, we could have blocked the big, ugly-ass bill.
But no, why? They still had the votes. Filibuster doesn't even come into effect.
Right, exactly.
What she should have said
was... That's right, exactly right. She wants to get rid of the filibuster, but prior to that, she wants to get rid of the Byrd rule.
She wants to get rid of the filibuster, but also reinsert it in places it wasn't actually useful.
Right.
What she said is like... I mean, what she should have said was... If the filibuster worked for a goddamn, we would have been able to use it to stand up for the big, ugly bill, but we weren't able to. But instead, she had to say, like, we should use it somehow to stop it, even though it passed last year. And again, it got to, in budget reconciliation, the filibuster doesn't, we've already got rid of the filibuster for that part of legislating.
Yes.
So it's irrelevant.
Yeah. She really got caught in a little bit of a maze there.
But the tax bill.
This is like trying to explain a David Lynch plot. Like trying to figure out what she's saying.
Where does this ear come from? She is a surrealist David Lynch character.
Really is.
Amazing. I mean,
it shows
down to the
though,
accent.
It shows like they're not sure-footed because none of these types of politicians have been prepared to enter a world where one of the main demands of your base is this major reform of like how the Senate does its business, which is what we need. And it's a good sign for this country when this sort of conversation gets started. This sort of thing about how we get rid of the filibuster, how does the Senate work in a modern world, was a question that was brought up during the civil rights movement. And it is a problem and it needs to be reformed. And the filibuster has always had to go. And even if, you know, people haven't quite worked out what that means yet, if you're Haley Stevens.
Right. So let's now turn to this other section. I think we'll end with the AIPAC part. I sent the time codes, Matt, in the chat. This is relevant because Dr. Abdulal Sayed has made Medicare for All central to his political project. He's written a book about it. I have it. It's a great book that explains how Medicare for All would work. And it's part of why Bernie Sanders endorsed him as soon as he jumped into the race. There's around 30 million Americans that are uninsured in this country. That number's increasing due to the Republicans gutting healthcare, the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid. Around half of Americans are on employer-based insurance, but 2 in 5 Americans are covered by Medicare or Medicaid. I bring up that, and then everybody else, it's a hodgepodge or they're uninsured. And to be clear, because this came up also in our interview with Mallory McMorrow that I did with Matt Bernstein about her opposition to Medicare for All, she repeatedly in the clip that we played said that Medicare for All is all government run health care. That's not it. Medicare for All is just expanding the existing Medicare system. It is government run insurance. Medicare for All promises no premiums or deductibles because it's like Medicare replaced through a system of taxation. What Mallory McMorrow supports is a public option, maintaining the private system and its infrastructure, and creating an option for the public to be able to buy in to a government system. That would still involve premiums. It would still involve deductibles. And additionally, a public option is just a lot more inefficient because you would still need the government to artificially, through subsidization and different mechanisms, keep costs down, because a public option doesn't prevent the scenario where there's a high risk pool and healthier patients stay on private plans. And that's what keeps costs up. What's so good about the Medicare for All proposal is that it would create the maximum amount of leverage possible to bring costs down, because it makes the government as the single negotiator for those prices.
It's simple math when it comes to insurance, that the larger the risk pool, the more efficient the insurance is.
Yes. So with that said, this is here part of the debate on healthcare. And I think this is relevant because McMorrow represents the public option position that I just laid out. And of course, Abdul Al-Sayed represents Medicare for All.
Abdul Al-Sayed has called for Medicare for All repeatedly mm-hmm. during this campaign. What's your answer to rising healthcare costs and increasing access by the citizens to healthcare?
Thank you. What I know is that our residents simply can't afford to wait. One of my constituents shared that she outright canceled her health insurance plan. Her premiums went from $200 a month to $2,000 a month when the Republicans voted to eliminate the ACA tax credits. People can't afford to wait for a revolution that may never come. People who are rationing their insulin right now can't afford to wait for Medicare for All when we have options on the table right now to lower prescription drug costs, to restore the ACA tax credits, to allow any Michigander who wants to opt into Medicare regardless of their age, to create a real public option that gives people choice and that forces private health insurance companies to bring their costs down.
I'll tell you this. Revolution's definitely not coming if we're not fighting for it. So let's play a game. If you're on the stage and you have never taken a corporate PAC check from Blue Cross Blue Shield, raise your hand. Anyway, all of that is to say, I think we really can fight for a world where everybody can be guaranteed health care. I think we really should fight for that world, because too many people in this country are going without the health care that they need and deserve. $225 billion in medical debt. That's bigger than the GDP of half the states in this country.
Thank you, sir.
I'm not done yet. I just want to say one more thing. It is important for us to recognize that all of these issues go back to how we finance campaigns. And it just keeps coming back and coming back. Thank you.
We've heard. Thank you.
Okay.
And we'll touch on how campaigns are financed in just a second, because I want to make sure to round out our coverage of this debate that we cover the AIPAC part. But very well done there. Pointed out, he's talking about political corruption there and the donations that both McMorrow and Stevens have received. But it's like, when she says we have to wait, and she thinks that voters are going to take that at face value, like we don't have time to wait, and this is why we have to wait. No one is like inherently believing you at this point that your scenario for pragmatism is more or less realistic than the guy that's standing up there offering you something.
You haven't delivered.
There's no credibility to make that case anymore. The constant losing to Trump, the constant capitulation. Democratic voters are cynical for like the first time in a really long time, and it's a good thing.
And they've seen the other side exercise power.
Yeah, right. And McMorrow, I mentioned this earlier, but The Lever has done really good reporting on how the Searchlight Institute and majority Democrats, these political action committees, or at least majority Democrats I forget exactly what the Searchlight Institute's construction is legally, but like they are not supposed to be coordinating this closely with McMorrow's campaign, and yet they are. They are. So she is trying to position herself as somebody who's between the corrupt candidate and the guy that's so unrealistic and pie in the sky. But she's so much closer to Stevens than she is to Abdul Al-Sayed. And the voters seem to be responding to it. And that is like, and I think it's almost the fact that she takes this money and is dishonest about it may be hurting her. Like, McMorrow is dropping in the polls like a rock, and Haley Stevens is still somehow maintaining some of this support. But she's taken $5 million of dark money via AIPAC, and McMorrow, it's more opaque, but she filled out this AIPAC position paper and has been taking donations from Zionist groups, or at least accepting their support. Dropside News reported on that AIPAC position paper. But
which has not been made public as far as I can tell.
Yes, but the support that she's getting from majority Democrats and Searchlight Institute, we played Auchincloss on the show, who is of majority Democrats, who was saying and hinting that he might support Susan Collins over Plattner. These are the waters that McMorrow is swimming in here with her campaign and the money that she's accepted to support her.
Yeah, closet Republicans. I mean, Auchincloss used to be a Republican. He's my age, so like, pardon me if I don't think like him changing to a Democrat during the second Obama term is that impressive. Like, these people shouldn't be trusted.
Exactly. But here is this part where each candidate is asked about spending on their behalf, particularly AIPAC.
You take money from AIPAC. Walk us through what that money means and what it buys and maybe what it doesn't.
Well, look, my campaign for U.S. Senate for Michigan is a love letter to our state. I'm deeply proud to have grassroots support coming from grocery clerk workers to retired teachers to factory workers.
To Benjamin Netanyahu.
The like. I'm also deeply honored to have the support of former governor.
Can you pause Jennifer it? Don't Granholm, take it off the screen. Congresswoman Does seem like she supports the filibuster, huh? I mean, come on. Everyone hears this and goes, bullshit. Answer the question. Like,
let me talk to you about the elderly people who I see in grocery store parking lots.
Who does this work on anymore? Everyone's already listening to podcasts as white noise. They're tuning into the debate to hear your freaking answer, lady.
Right. Workers.
Although this is some white noise.
Oh. They-o.
Workers to retired teachers to factory workers and the like. I'm also deeply honored to have the support of former Governor Jennifer Granholm, Congresswoman Brenda Lawrence, and Debbie Stabenow standing alongside me, individuals who fight for Michigan and win for Michigan, which is absolutely what I want to do as Michigan's next U.S. Senator. Look, Michiganders are frustrated because
Look.
We have not done comprehensive campaign finance reform. Mike Rogers will not vote for comprehensive campaign finance reform like I have in the House of Representatives. We squarely need to put people at the front of our agenda.
Campaigns
are about movements of ideas, Stephen. Campaigns are about movements of ideas. And I articulate positions of freedom and democracy and what Michigan needs
rights?
To succeed at the global stage and
And you're also just not answering the question.
Go ahead.
Look, at the end of the day, it also buys $3.5 billion sent to a foreign military that could be used here to give glasses here, to provide health care here, to build schools here. That's where our money should be used. And look, people know me. I say the same thing everywhere. I come to Mackinac, tell you all I want to tax billionaires. I go down south, tell people I want to tax billionaires. I say the same thing to everybody. If you want to support my campaign, fantastic. If you don't, if it comes down to having more money from a donor or having a message, I'm going to choose a message every time. And I think that's the difference. That's what we need in our politics.
Excuse me, I wasn't done talking about the retired factory working teacher.
Yeah. She's just going through the alphabet. And putting work around the end.
Oh,
what
and there's
starts
Mr.
with
Mailman.
A?
I hate Mr. Mailman.
Yeah. I have the support of him. And like, Abdul didn't even need his full time. El Sayed was just like, yeah, straight up. And to contrast that with how she's so, like, laboriously listed all the people that support her that aren't AIPAC, it's just, like, if people are actually looking at this, I really think that folks are starting to get it. Here's McMorrow's answer to this question.
much.
I appreciate that. And messages are great, and you actually need to know how to deliver them. On this campaign, I have not taken a dime of corporate PAC donations. I have not taken a dime of APAC donations. This campaign is entirely funded by 120,000 individual donors, more grassroots support than my opponents combined, the most amount of money from Michigan, and we are building up a campaign that shows that we can run very differently, that we can win very differently.
Thank you, but we want to focus.
I just want to ask about the last two campaigns, though.
Mr. El-Sayed, we want to focus on the issue and get some more specific.
And we were talking about foreign policy, but yet we're talking about campaign finance reform.
Excuse me, Ms. Dean. We want to focus on this question. This is a divisive issue.
All right, that's good.
I love everyone losing patience with Haley Stevens.
Haley Stevens, like, realized, dang, okay, I've got to maybe put a button on this because it did not go so well. It's touchy for her.
Yeah.
Because APAC is touchy for everybody else, and people are sick of the genocide. This was another, just to again, round this out, because I'm enjoying Haley Stevens for some reason. She avoids here in this interview answering a question about APAC as well. And this is, she got a little bit testy with the interviewer the other day.
Not hiding anything from voters. I'm not breaking FEC laws.
Nice.
I, you know, by any stretch of the means. In fact, I'm compliant with the FEC laws and, you know, what's gone on here. So yeah, maybe that's something on the.
Just trying to see whether
and,
you're
and also,
about
Chad, you know that individual contra. No, I'm not.
Okay.
No. You're asking me. Why would you ask me that question, first of all?
Well, I'm asking because your opponents are going to, like, hanging it as one of their big issues they're going to try to use against you here in the next 3 months.
In paid communications or when they're out there talking?
Yeah, both. Yeah.
And why do you think they're doing that?
I'm sorry.
Go
back slightly. The tick that her face, when she gets pissed there and she looks to the side, that is the most human thing I've ever seen. Keep going.
I'm asking because your opponents are going to, like, hanging it as one of their big issues they're going to try to use against you here in the next 3 months.
In paid communications or when they're out there talking?
Yeah, both. Yeah.
And why do you think they're doing that?
Trying to tap into some anti-Israel sentiments in the Democratic.
Do you think it's foreign policy? Yeah, I think we should talk about foreign policy. Not
okay, so that's the other thing. So why? That's exactly what her stupid answer was on stage too. That I thought we were talking about foreign policy. Now we're talking about campaign finance reform. Yeah, that's the whole deal. that's the whole thing that we're talking about. We're talking about how we have a lobby that's corrupted our government, and they're acting and committing genocide on behalf of a state. That is, and the will of the people is against what you're doing, and you're doing it anyway. That's the whole thing that we're talking about right now.
Also, isn't she supposed to be having these conversations with her team? Like, it feels like she's hashing out her policy with the reporter.
It was like that Becerra clip that we played where he was like, I thought this was going to be a softball interview. It's like, no, you got to figure that out beforehand. Stop saying this on camera. What do we have here?
This is 2 months ago, a little video posted by APAC to their YouTube page.
Hi, everyone. It's Congresswoman Haley Stevens, and I want to communicate the message.
I love the standing triumphant music
and freedom, standing with our allies abroad, standing alongside the only democracy in the Middle East, and making sure that we continue to support an incredible relationship that yields trade, that yields economic growth, and that keeps our freedoms safe.
La 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 la.
Keep our freedom safe with APAC.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel really inspired.
But you want to talk about foreign policy?
Filibuster Booth. Emma watching Stevens feels like Brandon watching a cop get a DUI. There's something about that. Yeah, but leftist big pharma plug. Okay, Haley Stevens is the real life Selena Meyer. They think that's true.
Yeah, well, I don't know if she's as sassy and funny and quick.
No.
She's a bit bumbly.
But that's the comedic impact that I didn't know I was needing in my life.
I'm fascinated by her, honestly.
Me too.
Yeah.
We should get a drink, Haley.
I would, but it would be more like how you go to a zoo.
Yeah.
I would just like observe her and take
I just want
notes.
To play this one part again, just because it's like, it's funny, it's like, yeah, we think it might be an issue.
Right.
That question, first of all.
Well, I'm asking because they're your opponents, and they're going to, like, hanging it as one of their big issues they're going to try to use against you here in the next 3 months.
In paid communications, or just when they're out there talking?
Yeah, both.
And why do you think they're doing that?
Like a catcher, like, arguing with the pitcher about, like, I don't think you should throw the curveball again.
I mean, she got so pissed there that her lower teeth went above her top teeth, like when your jaw, when you just like are so right, when you're when you're so angry that you can't even control how you're clenching your jaw, man. All right, well, those are three major Senate races. I feel like we did a really good job covering them in the first hour. I don't know why I'm fixated on the format, but it's just, gosh, some of the Trump stuff, it's, you need a little bit of reprieve from it, constantly talking about this clown every single day. And it's a good reminder that there are some real people that could change our country in a positive way that are running in major Senate races across the country.
It gets very tiring, just like when he tries to juice the markets with peace deals, and we have to cover it like it's news.
Oh, another head fake about the Iran negotiations. Great. Total Groundhog Day situation. Folks, it is your support that makes this show possible. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. You can become a member. It helps us stay resilient in times like these, when we're on these third-party platforms that we don't have much control over. When we have members, we don't have to rely exclusively on, you know, ad revenue on YouTube or Twitch or whatever like that. So, plus you can IM the show, and we might read your IM on air. Like Reese from Tacoma said, like a Shih Tzu effing killed me. Coffee came out of my nose, and it just hit me just right. So, leftist big pharma plug. Imagine Matt Bernstein out with McMorrow accidentally running into Emma with Haley Stevens. Same bar? Because at the end, Matt Bernstein said, like, I'd be fine getting a drink with her. I just don't think you should be a senator.
That's a great... That's that polite line.
Oh, it's just devastating coming from him. It really is. Oh, and people should look out. I did another collaboration with him. It's not out yet. Maybe I don't want to spoil it. But we cover an odious person currently... in the news, and we do a deep dive into him.
Narrows
so.
It down.
Yeah, it. Think AI data centers. Little teaser. Matt, what's happening on Left Reckoning and the Jackman Show?
Jackman Show with Abby Martin coming up at 3:00 Eastern Time, right after the show today. Go subscribe to Jackman Meg YouTube and be ready for that.
All right. See you in the fun half in a second. Once.
Okay, Emma, please.
Well, I feel that my voice is sorely lacking on the Majority Report.
Wait, whoa. Look, Sam is unpopular.
I do deserve a vacation at Disney World. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome Emma to the show.
It is Thursday.
I think you need to take over for Sam.
Yes, please.
No, I'm gonna pause you right there.
Wait, what?
You can't encourage Emma to live like this. And I'll tell you why. So I was offered a tour, sushi, and poker with the boys. Sushi and poker with the boys. Was offered a tour.
Yeah.
Sushi and poker with the boys.
What?
Tour. Sushi and poker.
Tim's upset.
Tour. Sushi and poker with the boys. Was offered a tour. Sushi and
that's what we call the biz.
Tour. Sushi and poker with the boys.
Right.
Tour. Sushi and poker.
We're gonna get demonetized.
I just think that what you did to Tim Pool was mean.
Free speech.
That's not what we're about here. Look at how sad he's become now. You shouldn't even talk about it. I think you're responsible.
I probably am in a certain way, but let's get to the meltdown here.
Twerk, sushi, and poker with the boys.
Oh my god.
Twerk,
wow.
Sushi.
I'm sorry, I'm losing my fucking mind.
So it's offered a twerk, sushi, and poker with the boys.
Logic.
Twerk, sushi, and poker with the boys. Boy, twerk.
I think I'm like a little kid. I think I'm like a kid.
Had this debate 7,000 times.
I'm losing my fucking mind.
Some people just don't understand.
So I'm not trying to be a dick right now, but like, I absolutely think the U.S. should be providing meat.
with a wife and kids.
That's not what we're talking about here. Okay,
all right. It's not a fun job. Twerk?
That's a real thing. That's a real thing. Real thing.
What's Willy Wonka twerk?
That's a real thing. That's a real thing. Real thing.
What's that offered to twerk?
That's a real thing. That's a real thing. Real thing.
What's that
twerk? A real thing.
That's a real thing. Real thing.
What's that offered to twerk?
Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Rogan has done it again.
That offered to twerk?
That's a real thing.
That's
a real thing.
I think he might be blowing it out of proportion.
Real thing.
That's
Paul Kerr with the boys.
That offered to twerk?
That's a real thing.
That's
Paul Kerr.
Let's go, Joey.
Twerk. Sushi and Paul Kerr with the boys.
Take it easy, Glenn.
Twerk. Sushi and Paul Kerr.
Things have really gotten out of hand.
Sushi and Paul Kerr with the boys.
Illusional.
Twerk.
Deluded.
Sushi.
You don't have a clue as to what's going on.
Live YouTube.
Sam has Twitch. The weight of the world on his shoulders.
Poggers.
Sam doesn't want to do this show anymore.
Can't do it anymore.
It was so much easier when the Majority Report was just you.
Let's change the subject.
Right. Rangers and Knicks are doing great.
Now shut up. Don't want people saying reckless things on your program.
That's
now,
one of the most difficult parts about this show.
This is a pro-killing podcast.
I'm thinking maybe it's time to bury the hatchet.
Left is best. Trump. Violet.
Twerk.
Don't be foolish and don't fucking tweet at me. Don't ditch. The way Emma has cucked all of these people.
Love it.
That's where my heart is, so yeah. I wrote my honors thesis about it.
Oh, she wrote an honors thesis. Yeah. I guess I should hand the main mic to you now.
You are to the right of me on foreign policy.
We already fund Israel, dude. Are you against that?
That's a tougher question. I have an answer to.
Incredible theme song.
Hi, Bumbler.
Emma Viglin, absolutely one of my favorite people. Actually, not just in the game, like, period.
We are back, folks. It is the fun half of the Majority Report. Socialist accountant. That APAC ad reminds me of those tone-deaf videos that corporations make of their office culture. That's the exact vibe.
Yeah, the royalty-free music.
Yes, yeah. APAC couldn't pony up.
They don't have the money.
Yeah, no. Yeah, right. They're spending it all on these races, I guess. Eve offline is the worst Shark Tank on Shark Tank Kevin O'Leary. Yes, it is. So I just got a text. The episode's out. I don't know why I was coy about it, but you can. we did a deep dive into Kevin O'Leary, and it's really fun. I always love collaborating with Matt Bernstein. So check out A Bit Fruity. I am on this week to talk about Kevin O'Leary. It was a really fun episode. Glenn Beck ate my dad. Have you guys played the clip where Stevens is in tears talking about Israel? Yes. Brain Drain Nation. Wow, I feel so embarrassed for her. I'd imagine that was after the filibuster answer.
Could have been anything. It's like every time she opens her mouth.
Yeah. Best rib. We literally do not care. Haha. I'm not sure what
that's about. Literally like if Marge had Homer's brain.
Yeah.
That's what she is.
It's like one of Marge's sisters. Right?
Galactic Nurse Books, great explanation of the public option versus Medicare for All, Emma. Yeah, I actually reread some sections of Abdul's book before my interview with McMorrow, so it was kind of fresh off the top of my head. Bob Villain, that Haley Stevens accent is 1,000% Lynchian. I've never heard another human being that sounds like that. Social Democrat Detroit, McMorrow is better than you give her credit for, and I've met her in person. That being said, I will almost certainly vote for Abdul because his policies are better. Stephen, though, not voting for her, even if she wins the nomination. The 11th district in Michigan is not purple. I live there, and the GOP opponent got about 38% of the vote. Happy to provide you more info for you guys anytime. Left is best. I guess I wasn't really specifically referring to it then, but the it had, she'd won races in like more toss-up districts. Maybe it's changed since that point, is my understanding as to why Chuck Schumer was supportive of her. I appreciate it. McMorrow's a standard Democrat, but that's not what we're after right now. We have like,
she's a standard Democrat making very clear decisions in this campaign toward trying to be a third way between genuine progressive energy and establishment safe pick. It's clear as day that she's doing that. You know, what she feels in her heart is, you know, not super relevant.
It's not relevant, but there's, I think for me, somebody who I know is smart and like knows better than what is being said, as Haley Stevens just seems insane. And that's why it's more fun. McMorrow's smart enough to know what she's doing, and that bothers me more a little bit.
I mean, I think it's also just the sort of wolf in sheep's clothing thing. I think you shouldn't pretend like, oh, I would love Medicare for All. It's just not feasible. I think that type of like liberalism, which I think you see it in. I'm not going to name any names, like the Vox type people, but like people are sick of it because like also you haven't shown any ability. It'd be one thing if you had a good record of winning elections and then saying like, well, we can't do it, but you lose to the right and then we lose ground because you can't actually fucking govern when you get into it. The Biden administration was a perfect example. They hit the ground running with some good initiatives, Lena Khan, the Build Back Better, and then they let the fucking loser moderate. Get involved, and they winged their agenda, cut it, and it didn't deliver enough to keep Trump out of office. People know this is what happened. It's just objective.
Yep. Juniper J, where in Texas is this guy from? Brisket tacos are everywhere here. While David's around Austin.
Chopped beef was the term, though. He said chopped beef burritos. That's what he hadn't heard of.
Yes, chopped beef? Like...
Which is a brisket taco, but it's just using it wrong.
Okay.
That's why Griscom was confused.
Gosh, brisket tacos. Are those a thing down... must be a thing down in Texas.
Absolutely.
That sounds like it would make my stomach hurt, but to each their own. Although now I am hungry. Because like, there's a lot of IMs right now about meat. The people's eyebrow. You guys need to drop the Hail to Vega or Vega, Hail to Vega clip from Contact. I haven't seen Contact. Spaghetti Brains. They keep calling Tallarico vegan because they're desperate to watch him eat meat. Weird little freaks. Ronald Vegan. Sorry, can you guys not mock the way Trump pronounces my name? Funny. All right. What number is this?
This isn't a number, it is funny. Zora Mamdani tweeted out yesterday, I think it was. Yeah. This morning we are introducing COGE, the Commission on Government Efficiency. This commission will find ways for our city to work smarter, faster, and more efficiently for working people. New Yorkers deserve a city government as careful with their money as they are.
Yeah, I mean, of Zoran's... like amazing public statements. That was I don't get the Coge thing, but he's trying to reclaim it from Doge, I guess. It's fine.
Yeah, he's making fun of Doge.
Yeah, yeah.
And also and canceling like McKinsey contracts.
Yeah, yes. They are actually doing it. Yeah. There's a lot of low hanging fruit in that sort of regard. But the one difference being Elon Musk wouldn't say it's for working people, he'd say it's for taxpayers. Nick Shirley, intrepid reporter says this, and I'll read it in the Nick Shirley voice. This sounds a lot like Doge. Weird how your own governor questioned me when I speculated the sudden increase in spending in areas like childcare and NYC, and now you do this. Which is a good thing, by the way. Cutting waste, fraud, and abuse should be the most nonpartisan issue in America as it affects everyone. So yeah, nothing gets past Nick Shirley.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's making fun of Doge. Obviously. I just think the acronym's kind of whatever silly, but it is, I do like what he's doing here. And it just showed that, like, damn, you really don't have, like, that kind of, I don't know, literacy or understanding that you could figure that out?
I've seen this before.
Zoran's like, shit, I didn't even
fucking
think
damn!
Of that. Like, honestly, Nick Shirley talks like he thinks like he's still teething.
I mean... Matt, it sounded exactly like him. Yeah. It's barely an exaggeration.
Benevolent?
Is he allowed to drive a car?
What does benevolent mean?
God. I mean...
I'm sure Peter Thiel gave him a driver.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We don't have to worry about it anymore. Yeah.
Still can't get over the time that some Nazi that he follows was showing videos of Orthodox Jews, like, doing something in New Jersey, and he's like, this is bad, and everyone's like, no, Nick, not like
hey.
This is not one of the groups you're demonizing, okay, yes. Buddy?
Nice try, but it's not that group, okay?
Browner. But don't... Browner, Nick.
But don't be discouraged from trying. There
Get
is
the
no
color chart out again for Nick.
There is no judgment in brainstorming, even if the storm in your brain is more like a light drizzle.
The storm is like a California winter.
Yeah. His bank account all of a sudden just completely zeroed out.
Science is political. Listen, you all can't talk about Shirley like that because my wife has said that even after 15 years together that his Spanish is better than mine. It's so humiliating. Dimpria, attaboy, Nick, tussles hair. Sam's slutty little glasses. Nick Shirley is surprisingly literate for someone with lukewarm piss in his head instead of a brain. Sergeant Flex spot on of Shirley Matt, MJ617, oh shit, Matt dropping the Shirley impression. Julio, unfortunately, in Alabama. Matt, WTF, laughing my ass off. I just spat out my soda all over my desk. God damn it.
Ruining keyboards across the country.
Yep. That's what we've been doing all day. AOD fan, everyone see Dave Rubin is going on Jubilee Surrounded this Sunday. Oh, yes.
We can't wait.
We are very excited. Yeah. It's a national holiday here at the Majority Report.
I think it might be an entire fun half.
Yes.
Yeah. I rang that bell on YouTube for sure.
What should we get? Oh, wait, do we have that Vance AI clip?
Yes.
Okay, what number is that? Okay.
10.
10. J.D. Vance spoke at the Air Force Academy graduation, and he brings up in his remarks AI. Before we show the clip, there was an interesting piece in Politico today that was in our packet about how Trump scrapped an executive order related to AI at the last minute, and how, as Politico reports it, it was because David Sachs intervened at the 11th hour to prevent the executive order from passing. The executive order was so toothless and pathetic that the fact that Sachs intervened just goes to show how these sociopathic billionaires won't give an inch unless we force them into submission. And we're going to have to do that through really aggressive taxation and also prosecuting some of them for their criminality. But like this AI executive order was just about, hey, can it's a voluntary oversight system. Can you please submit your AI models so the federal government can review it? Voluntary was in the executive order. And according to Politico, David Sachs was like, no, because he was initially supportive of it. But then he was worried that one day the agreement might become mandatory. That's what was said to Politico. This is what we have to face in terms of how we have to regulate these companies, and they are interested in one thing. It's our job to be in the public's interest. So J.D. Vance understands that there's this kind of growing populist anger about AI data centers cropping up around the country and polluting people's waterways, being noisy, massive behemoths of just monstrous data centers that are really harming people from an environmental racism perspective, but also just like, you know, it's happening across the country in all these different communities. Virginia is really getting polluted right now, for example. So all these AI executives have been getting booed across the country, and J.D. Vance has clearly seen these clips. This is how he speaks to the Air Force cadets about that dynamic.
This is the only commencement speech that I'm giving this year, and so I've watched a few highlights of graduation speeches where this or that corporate leader will discuss artificial intelligence, AI, and be met with literal boos. Now, you can't boo me. I'm the Vice President of the United States. But your fellow Americans are, understandably, they're worried about AI.
Can you pause it for a sec?
About how it will affect the labor market.
So what he's really saying there, I know it's a joke because the Air Force, you know, they're not able to show discontent with the Vice President of the United States, obviously. But, like, the implication of what you're joking is that you're really enjoying that the kids, the young people in the audience that are graduating can't tell you how they really feel about the technology that you are completely in bed with in a corrupt manner, and that, like, these Silicon Valley freaks are very much why J.D. Vance is even in this position. And so he's just, it's just, I don't know if I'm overreading into it, but I just found it so off-putting how he's just, like, enjoying the power he has over them.
Well, it's also funny to laugh at, like, being impotent to speak up for yourself. Like, oh, it's very funny. Yeah, we actually can't say anything. And yeah, isn't that amusing?
Yep.
About how it will affect the labor market, how it will distribute resources, and how it has fundamentally changed how we interact with one another, our social lives. But the thing I worry about most with AI is how it will change warfare. Now, Pope Leo XIV, in a recent document, encouraged us as human beings not to outsource the most important moral decisions to digital technology. And I want to endorse that sentiment and make it more specific to each and every one of you. AI will inevitably change warfare. And of course, as you've learned over the last 4 years, it already has. But one of the things that makes Americans unique, that makes you as warfighters unique, is that we wage war justly.
For show.
Okay. So what's interesting is that it's been 3 years since Trump and Vance launched their criminal illegal war on Iran, and we bombed a girls' school and killed over 160 children.
3 months.
Oh, sorry, what did I say?
You said years.
Yeah. Damn it. Ah, I've got to listen to myself. 3 months. It's been 3 months, but it feels like 3 years. And there has been no investigation that has concluded about what happened there. They double tapped that girls' school. Initially, they were blaming AI for it. So which one is it? Is J.D. Vance and the administration using these AI tools in the way that he describes about the moral way? Or did you make the decision as an administration to double tap the girls' school without the use of AI? Or it was a hybrid of the two and you did it anyway and double tapped them on purpose? Like, which one? We're still waiting breathlessly for the results of the Pentagon investigation. Yeah. But you can't have it both ways, where you lecture the Air Force cadets about using AI in warfare in a moral way, and then also claim that it was AI that mistakenly bombed the girls' school. Because, you know, I don't believe that. I believe that someone like Pete Hegseth, with his Crusades tattoo and with his anti-Muslim fervor and hatred, was probably a little bit gleeful about making them feel pain and borrowing from the tactics of our colony, Israel, to inflict that kind of pain on the Iranian people. And so you can't have it both ways.
Also, as somebody who's been, who was Catholic before J.D. Vance ever was named J.D. Vance, I just say, like, it sounds like you have stuff to work out between you and the Pope, and maybe it's getting in the way of you being a public servant. Like,
yeah.
If you're so worried about what... Like, you've had public spats with the Pope. What he's saying about this AI making decisions like that, it's very clear, like, whether how aware we are or not that this sort of technology is going to be used just to, like, quickly throw bombs at targets, and they don't really give a shit whether it's a school or not. You are already in violation of this guy who you're saying, like, I want to reaffirm what he said. Like, you're full of shit. And also, like, it's weird because you should be talking about what is good for America, not whether you're going to get into hell or not because you're disagreeing with the Pope publicly.
Yeah.
I also think he might be trying to wedge some space between him and Trump. A little bit, too.
Interesting. That's interesting. Yeah.
You want more of this?
Yeah.
all of us wage war justly, I mean fundamentally that you must do so. Because you are the ones who execute. You are the ones who lead on the battlefield. You are the ones who ensure that our lethality in war, which is amazing and necessary, it also coexists with our heart and with our conscience.
Okay, well, that's good. Good luck with that. I don't know how you sleep at night, but sure thing, buddy.
He doesn't, because he's worried about how AI is going to affect warfare.
Yes.
Keeps him up at night.
To your point, though, about like distance with Trump, in that Politico article, you know, Politico is like page six for DC people. I mean, it's like anytime you read something in Politico, it's in there with like it's gossip, but it's highfalutin gossip, and it's there because somebody wants it there. And I just think it's interesting how this AI article talked about David Sacks, named him in particular, and they also did this and again, you don't know if you can fully believe it, it's just a piece of information. But they separated the different camps in the White House in, like, who wants to regulate AI and who doesn't. The AI czar, David Sacks, shockingly, does not want to regulate the industry and is insistent that they need to just let AI, the AI industry, do whatever it wants because we have to compete against China. Then apparently in the middle is Pete Hegseth, who I just don't even believe has any real thoughts about anything, but is somehow in or he's on the side of we should go slower. That's what Politico said. And then Susie Wiles and Bessent said that they were in the middle on this issue. J.D. Vance isn't in that conversation apparently at all. But you see articles where it's like Vance and Rubio, who want to run in 2028, are in the room and are more skeptical about the Iran war than others. And that will be leaked to like the New York Times or something like that. So Vance's opinion is not in that article. And that's, in my view, because he's much closer to the David Sacks camp on AI. And this is going to be a real issue in 2028. And Vance's connection with the Silicon Valley AI freaks should be alarming to people. Ramona Frankenstein, JD doesn't sleep at night because he's too busy effing the couch. Yes, yes. JD, Vance's cushion pushing. Who came up with this warfighter's term? I see everyone parrot now. I've never heard it until this administration. It's just fascist propaganda.
Well, it's actually like a 90s PC military term.
Oh, interesting.
It's a gender neutral military term.
Our warfighters.
That's amazing. Oh my God. Yeah. So they've reappropriated it?
Yeah.
Tempe from Maryland. Nick Shirley was homeschooled by a fundamentalist Christian, so yeah, he pretty much is completely uneducated. I'd feel sorry for him, but I don't have the time.
At a certain point, you become an adult and you become responsibility for your own works.
Fetterman's Churian. Anyone who says making fun of Shirley or Fetterman is ableist is missing the point. We expect all people, regardless of brain functioning, to be good people. It's actually ableist to give them a free pass from criticism. There you go.
Also, I don't know that Shirley has anything wrong with him besides being homeschooled by psychos.
Yes.
I don't think ableism really comes in there.
Exactly. Nico Damos. Shirley sounds like the elephant boy from the Howard Stern show. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, before my time.
Than I am for Sam Day, maybe. Social conservative, fiscal level. Not to defend Nick Shirley. He goes beyond conservatives are stupid. He seems to have a severe learning disability and is being run by somebody.
I'm sorry. This is the true face of conservatism. Stop gatekeeping. That's how dumb they are. Look at Ben Shapiro is getting his clock cleaned by Asmongold, like a obvious shut-in with a personality disorder that can't leave the house.
Yes.
Like, and every cop in America is like, yeah, I'd rather watch him than Ben Shapiro.
Right. So Kyle Kulinski responded to someone upset that, I guess, Stephen... What did the Democratic Party's account tweet about Stephen Miller? Ugly.
We have that in the sound sheet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's get into that then. Maybe I'll just send Kyle's tweet here because it made me laugh. Kyle Kulinski is the leader of the dark woke movement on the internet, where we are not going to be playing nice with these fascists anymore. We are going to mock you. We are going to say that you're ugly that you're venomous, that you're stupid. It doesn't help the Democrats to unilaterally disarm in the meme war. I also think there's like this level of condescension that past liberals have had where like people, I don't know, want honesty. And when you're constantly policing how you're engaging in political discourse, it comes off as dishonest.
Yeah.
So
it's fundamentally elitist, whether you're right or wrong, to tell somebody they have bad manners.
It's politically important that we just say, like, come on, guys, we're dealing with literal Nazis here. Yes. It's important that we attack them in any way that we possibly can. I just enjoyed this tweet from Kyle in response to somebody who was upset that the Democratic Party called Stephen Miller ugly. Kyle says, sorry, we don't do this anymore in the dark woke era. Say whatever the F you want to these evil C words. And that's pretty much where I'm at as well. Here is, though, this issue where Stephen Miller, he just failed so miserably in trying to roast James Tallarico. But this was last night, right?
Right. So the one that Matt has pulled up here is number 7.
Yes, which... that's the more relevant one. Yeah, and then we'll go back to that. But because this happened, I think, a day or two ago, Stephen Miller called James Tallarico trans. And the Democratic Party account responded and said, shut up, you ugly F word. That's the dark wokeness that Kyle was defending. So he, like a man, sends his wife onto television to defend his honor. And here she is on Laura Ingraham talking about how horrible it is that the Democrats would call her husband ugly.
Your husband came under attack today when he said, like, the Democrats are, you know...
Just the setup. He called him transgender.
He came under attack today.
And now he's under attack. I was saying this earlier. This reminds me, there's a Mr. Yeah. Show sketch where this separatist Montanan is shooting at the FBI, and then they shoot him, and the woman goes, they shot him. All he was doing was shooting at them, and then they shot
yeah,
him.
Right.
And well, that's exactly what's going on here.
There are so many patterns in conservative thought and logic, but the look what you made me do one, which is like, you made me act this way because of how horrible you are to me. It's abuser logic.
In response
logic.
To how horrible I was to you.
In response to, yeah. It's literally like what an abusive husband says. You look what you made me do. You made me punch you because you were being so unreasonable. But even, like, what's more applicable to this is the perpetual self-victimization. And the Stephen Miller wants everybody to assume that he's a strong man because of how tough he talks about brutalizing immigrants. And yet, every action that he takes when it comes to personal insults directed at him is the most weak thing that you could possibly do, including sending your wife out to do this. And Trump's the same exact way. He's a bully to everybody else, but God forbid you say one thing or disagree with him 1% like Cornyn did. He's going to get rid of your political career. So they pretend that weakness is strength. That's another hallmark of conservatism. Anyway, here is Katie to talk about how Stephen Miller's the real victim.
Your husband came under attack today when he said, like, the Democrats are, you know, perhaps going to nominate their first transgender Senate candidate, talking about Tallarico. And they responded by just, you know, basically saying, shut up, you ugly F word, essentially. Any word for the Democrats, their little Twitter account.
This is the same violent political rhetoric that is leading people to shooting up, whether it be the White House Correspondents' Dinner or President Trump and Butler. But what it remains to be seen is this is an anonymous account, and it is run actually by a sad liberal woman named Paulina, which is why Pew says 50% of liberal women at some time have identified that they have a mental health disorder, and she is certainly one of them. What a sad state for the pathetic Democrat Party.
Well, Pauline, poor Pauline.
Okay, Katie.
Katie and Chris, great to see both of you. Your husband came under attack.
she's so happy. Yeah. I'm so happy.
The happiest woman in the world, Katie Miller.
Gosh, every day I wake up with a smile when I get to roll over and see Nosferatu next to me. Sorry, I stole that from Brian.
Well, I think that's just out there.
I mean, it's...
I think everybody sees public, that.
That's parallel thought. Yeah.
The resemblance is uncanny. Right. Or when she opens up the coffin to let him out in the morning. I shouldn't assume that they sleep together, obviously. Yeah.
You mean at night.
At night. Oh, yes. Thank you for the correction.
Sorry.
I don't know if I could make the argument better than Angie Sullivan of the I've Had It podcast. So I'm just going to outsource this to her. Friend of the show, Angie Pumps Sullivan on her show with Jennifer Welch, responding to Katie Miller, claiming that half of liberal women have mental health issues. That's the thing. What happened to like all of the we hear you about mental health? That's only for men.
Well, also conservative women aren't empowered to speak honestly about how they're feeling.
Right.
Woman, you're a liberal woman. Do you have a mental disorder?
Yeah, I do. It's called Katie Miller. Shut the fuck up, you stupid. That's my mental disorder. Here's the thing. I just want to point out what she didn't address. Katie Miller did not get on there and go on and on about how handsome Stephen Miller is, how he believes in people, how he wants every human to have rights. She didn't do any of that. She goes on this liberal, Katie, you married the world's fucking most unfuckable man. You are having your fourth child with him because the two of you spew hate as an aphrodisiac. So please do not tell me about liberal women, because here's the deal. I would rather be a baron, never having had sex, liberal woman, than fuck Stephen Miller on all the sex drugs Amsterdam can provide. So enough, Katie Miller. You're a liberal.
Jennifer gets a lot of the shine, and Angie picked her spots. Yeah. And she picked her spot
there. Spewing hate as an aphrodisiac is a great line.
It's a bar.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, what else do they have in common except aggrievement and hatred? God, what is their pillow talk?
I don't
want to think about it.
Katie Miller actually posted a photo of Polina, and it's funny because she like had to find one where it's like kind of a shaky camera.
Yeah,
but I'm sorry, Katie, like, first of all, I like, there's been more reporting done on this woman since you've decided to dox her. She is engaged now,
so. Oh, okay, because the caption says, first of all, she looks great.
Yeah, she does.
She looks great. She's a pretty girl. What is the Paula Mangabot, who runs the Democrats account? She's 30, unmarried with no kids. Put your name on it next time. This is what a sad, unhappy female liberal. She looks
great.
She's cute. Female liberal looks like. It's why Pew reports 50. All right. We heard you before.
I like a conservative woman that's trying to convince herself that she herself is happy by looking at polling about liberal women.
I mean, comparison is the death of happiness. But for insecure, like for really insecure women, I know this as I've gotten older. I know that maybe this is a bit a field, but like to talk about other people's weight or to talk about other people's, like, you know, I don't know. When you're really insecure about yourself, you compare yourself to other people all the time.
I'll say I'm not thinking about other men's weight right now.
Right, right. Like, but Katie Miller is thinking about this girl behind the anonymous Democrats Twitter, or I shouldn't call her girl, woman. A woman behind the anonymous Democrats Twitter account.
Yeah.
I
wonder how she would respond to Polian on if she's depressed or not.
Right. God, I can't stop thinking about how this... unhappy this woman is, because I'm so happy
running up to her after she comes out of the bathroom, like trying to take the worst, shakiest picture on her right. iPhone, and it's still better than you look on 4K.
Yeah,
studio lighting.
Oh god. Damn. Yeah, I happen to agree with Angie. I would rather be unmarried for the rest of my life and have zero children and just have my career than ever kissing Stephen Miller, kissing him.
A Children of Men sequel where just Stephen Miller is the last fertile man, and everyone's like,
"Oh, yeah. That's the end of human civilization."
There's actually no plot here.
Yes,
it's just over. See ya.
Let's just
Yeah, 2 second movie.
Grand opening, grand closing.
Julio, unfortunately, in Alabama, I wonder if conservative women like Katie are so mad because they don't get good lays. I say this as a man, so with respect. I mean, it maybe not like the lays part in, I'm sure that's part of it, but emotionally, do you think Stephen Miller emotionally fulfills Katie?
I think she's probably dark-hearted enough to where they just like look at pictures, like racist memes about like black people. And
that's
like,
the spewing hate is an effort.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Can we talk about my new favorite show?
Yeah.
It's brought to you by Jeff Bezos over at the Washington Post. He's doing some very interesting stuff over there.
Oh.
To help explain the world. There's a couple things here. Let's start first with this one on data centers.
Okay, because we did play one of these one time, and it was a guy that was going after the concept of a billionaire tax.
Exactly, yeah. Just very, like, sort of like, you know, yeah, the things they don't want you to talk about.
Social media discourse that is organic, and it's in a vertical cut, right? So it's for your phone. That must mean it's a new kind of media.
So here we go. Here's a couple of these guys. And there was this like James Holman guy who comes from Stanford, which is a very unsurprising that he would have an uncritical and pedantic view of like AI data centers and stuff like that. But there's some other people here, too, and they're all morons. So let's take a look.
The question is whether you will help shape artificial intelligence. We do not know, the precise contours of what this transformation will look like.
Is AI coming for people's jobs?
I'm basically no on this. I don't see it as fundamentally replacing people in a way that I think a lot of people in the Bay Area right now do think.
And I think it reflects a misunderstanding of what a job is, well, and what compensation is too, right? Total compensation is tied to productivity. And so if you have a technology that's going to make workers more productive, that means it's going to raise their compensation. And it also ignores that human beings' desires and our needs and wants are unlimited. And so when you invent a new technology, all of a sudden people come up with new ideas for things they wanted that they didn't even know they wanted before. The point of a job is to satisfy a need. If you increase the possibilities of things that people can want, you're also increasing the jobs that are going to be necessary to support that. And so that's what we see over and over again.
Want to put this up that I just sent in our chat?
Hold on. Yeah,
interesting claim about productivity. As you do that, I'm reminded that the Washington Post opinion page was one of the papers where the billionaire owner intervened and forced them to rescind their endorsement of Kamala Harris versus Trump. Same thing with the LA Times.
Right.
Turns out Bezos is like, I got away with that. I can get away with so much more. It's interesting that they brought up the disconnect between productivity being tied to compensation.
Yeah, they didn't bring up the disconnect.
Yes.
Here's what he said. I'll just play it here. This guy is an editor at the Washington Post now.
It reflects a misunderstanding of what a job is, well, and what compensation is too, right? Total compensation is tied to productivity. And so if you have a technology...
This is probably the most famous chart in the political economy of our fucking country right now.
I mean, this is a 10-year-old chart, but it's the exact same right now. This is how our economy has moved.
Since the late 70s, basically. Mid-70s, whenever you really... I mean, I've seen it really talk about this 80s period with the attack on the...
On unions, the tax cuts for the rich that Reagan oversaw. Yeah.
Nonetheless, disconnecting productivity and a typical worker's compensation, it's no longer tied to that at all. There was a very strong relationship to it until basically like neoliberalism. And that coupling has been destroyed. All these schmucks are there. And that guy's like, he's like an editor. Like I didn't have all their names of all these nerds, but they're all like Washington Post editors now. They're just completely lying to people in a vertical video format. We have another one, a more recent one, straight off the presses here, with a Hudson Institute fellow. And I'll be honest, she's not any more bright than those fellows were. Here she is talking about our mayor of New York City.
The language that Zoran Mamdani was using came from a very specific tradition. Mm-hmm. It's not 100% communist, and it's not 100% Islamist. There's a middle, is what I mentioned as third worldism, which is a political and ideological framework through which one divides the world into two groups. The first one being the oppressed, and the second one being the oppressed.
What is the core emotion that drives that train of thought?
Wait, hold on.
I think it's one of them.
Okay. One that divides into the oppressed and the oppressor is what she's saying, that divides the world into that way.
That's third worldism.
Yeah. So like that's just all politics. It's about the difference is that the right, they say that the oppressed are the people that are the oppressors, and they flip that, and the right says that the oppressed are the oppressors and that the oppressors are the oppressed. That's how it works.
Zineb Rabua is a research fellow at the Hudson Institute Center for Peace and Security in the Middle East. Hudson Institute is a neoconservative think tank. She specializes in Chinese and Russian involvement in the Middle East, the Sahel, North Africa, great power competition, and Israeli-Arab relations. Prior to joining Hudson Institute, Mr. Rabua was a research assistant at the Center for Jewish Civilization at Georgetown University, where she worked on Jewish identity in Morocco, Morocco-Israeli relations. This is Israeli propaganda.
Yeah.
This whole thing, this is what you've heard about, like, Bill Ackman and all these Zionists talk about, like, what are my kids being taught at school? They're this oppressor-oppressed thing, third worldism, whatever the hell like that is. It's just, they're trying to protect Israel. That's all this is.
I mean, the civilization in the title is such a tell. Anybody that's talking about, like, Western civilization or any kind of civilization like that as it relates to, like, our foreign policy is usually basically a Nazi.
Yeah. I think this is somebody who's just... And honestly, like, I just want to back up for a second. Do people, like Jeff Bezos, do you think anyone's fooled by this type of charlatanry? This is embarrassing.
It doesn't matter. He directed it. He wants it. I want this kind of content out there, and let's hope, like all conservative media, they're operating like they're the Daily Wire. We're going to take a loss. Press. I don't care. It's valuable that maybe we can trick two or three or four people with our, I mean, I know where they're going with this. This is basically like Nazi ideology, right? About his communism.
I mean, it's not full Islamism. It's not full communism. It's commu-Islamism.
Right. Well, okay. The this has been interchangeable in our politics for quite a while, but keep going.
Can one be in the oppressor?
What is the core emotion that drives that train of thought? Like, is that guilt?
This is actually important that this moron asked this question, because this is how you know you're about to get some bullshit in politics. When they immediately move to, don't like historicize these terms like communism, whatever the hell she's talking about, but you move directly move from any sort of historical or material concerns to, what's their mindset like?
Yeah,
psychoanalysis of these people that are opposed to us. Just figure out, is it jealousy?
I mean, that's Sam Harris, too, exactly. when he speaks about Muslim people. But, like, they are using, I didn't articulate it that well, but this is also the cultural Bolshevism Nazi conspiracy theory about Jews and socialists, but they're just putting Muslim people in.
Yeah, it's because now that Zionism is basically a white supremacist ideology. Yep, exactly.
What is the core emotion that drives that train of thought? Like, is that guilt?
I think it's one of them, but there's also sometimes a revengeist sentiment. Mm. There's also sometimes just a pure hatred for the country.
Female Nick Shirley.
Is it fair to say that third worldism is an extension of cultural Marxism?
Yes, it is. It is.
And it's in our culture. It has trickled down.
So they said it.
You see the oppressor-oppressed landscape applied to landlords. So there's this very binary, dumbed-down perspective of the world. Like,
you're smart,
owners,
though.
Bad. People who are renters, let's call it the broader working class, working poor, they are by default at odds to that class. And I think it's counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you do, buddy. And I don't think you'd have the job if you didn't.
It's like they do so much damage in using language about really, like, obvious material realities. Yes, the landlord has more power than the renter. And yet they cut, like, they intersperse it with language that sounds like they're talking about systemic racism or something like that. Like, how can we talk about systemic racism if this is what is polluting the discourse about the nature of the oppressor and the oppressed? They're making it about, like, they're obscuring it to protect capital.
And also, like, I mean, with her specifically about, like, Israel, right? Like, how dare you call Israel the oppressor and oppressed when it's more complicated than that? But Israel is, in its own way, a product of reparations.
Yeah.
Like they're trying to have it both ways and hoping people just don't have the attention span to notice it.
MJ617, I'm sure this guy never applies overly binary thinking in his day-to-day life. Paul Bett Davidson says, anyone who claims Mondani is a communist is deeply unserious and either has zero understanding of communism or is just evil, potentially both. Brain Drain Nation, this lady sounds like an AI chatbot.
Yeah, it did sound scripted, the podcast.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Four-person seater. Emma, you mean to tell me you wouldn't run your fingers through the beautiful locks that hang off that freshly polished head and smooch the cracked, thin Stephen Miller lips? No. Names Sam can't pronounce. The Miller's foreplay is watching Ice Body Cam videos. Yeah.
Goebbels speeches.
Yeah. Darth Moose, fourth Miller child. Oof, Katie, please get him some protection. Finger cots are in the first aid aisle. Sexiest. Uh-oh, Emma's learning how to pronounce words from Jillian Michaels. Don't be unilaterally learning from her, Emma. Bad luck. Love you guys. What happened? What did I say?
She's just joking because you said unilaterally and Jillian used that word wrong like 100 times.
Yes, okay,
but you
good.
Used it right.
Okay, good, good. Thank you, Brian. I often will sometimes not, because I'm thinking about the next word, I right. will say the wrong, and I appreciate when anyone corrects me, I amers as well, because I don't want that out there without a correction, me looking stupid and shit like that. No, no. Not interested in that. Congressional baseball fan, did y'all see the photo going around of JD's Vance's pointy teeth? Him getting veneers now sure looks like the dude is definitely planning to run in 2028, contrary to him saying he won't. Which is obviously him trying to time it right and not piss off Trump for stealing the spotlight too soon.
Be a tough tightrope to walk.
Yeah. Margot from Mass. My brother-in-law is a former Marine and now he's in reserves. He said all of his trainings are just AI, American Frontier AI. It's just Gemini, Grok, and ChatGPT. That's so dark. Dr. Chow's MD, incrementalism is what brought us to where we are, and no one believes that it will help solve any issue faced by Americans. Americans can wait is why we have to blow past the public option and go straight to Medicare. Can't wait is why we have to blow past the public option and go straight to Medicare for all, or expand the VA to provide care for all Americans. Galactic Nurse Bugs, Katie just needs to remind them that her husband is a sexual matador. I do really enjoy that clip just because Jesse is such a bully. And
Jesse Waters
is such a bully and such a, like, frat boy. And Stephen Miller doesn't even know that he's making fun of him to his face.
Yeah. And then he also made fun of him to his wife's face and his wife laughed at it. The sexual matador thing was to Katie.
Oh, my God, it was?
Yeah, and Katie laughed really hard.
It must be a joke. Okay, what should we do here? Maybe we'll just keep reading some IMs, and I mean, we don't have too much time. We did a lot today. Matt from Alberta, speaking of Miller, why does he always sit like he doesn't want people to see his right ear? He does have like a bit of a tick. Caleb Force A27, Stephen Miller looks like a sperm cell with a face. Salt pumps chose violence, and I'm here for it. Glenn Beckett, my dad, goddamn, I love pumps. And Jen Dreck, Stephen Miller is Peter from What We Do in the Shadows. I'm not sure. Hogtown, the cry bully shit is a hallmark of the regime. Here in Canada, the U.S. Ambassador Pete Hoekstra recently said he's baffled and annoyed by Canada's hostility to the U.S. When asked if he understands it, he says no. Now either he's at Nick Shirley levels of intelligence or this is an expected performance. To add insult to injury, Hoekstra's family was liberated by Canadian soldiers in World War II. He is Dutch.
Ancient history.
Suddenly, Cedar, Katie, you're not hot enough to have an attitude like that. fisting Cory Booker. Katie Miller is also an ugly F.
This sounds a lot like Doge Weird, how your own governor questioned me when I speculated the sudden increase in spending in areas like childcare in NYC.
What is this?
That's a Nick Shirley into a child Texas speech.
Gotta make it like more like a five-year-old. That was way more articulate than Nick Shirley ever sounded.
Like more kindergarten, please. Yeah. And, yeah.
The two front teeth missing.
Dave from Talon, it's amazing that there is not even the pretense that those kids might not be sent to war. That's off the table. It's only a matter of where we will be sending you. Legs, I'm Iowa born and raised, and I'm starting to worry about how frequently Hinson keeps bringing up walls. It's giving the impression that she would rather run against him over Turek, given that Turek won against a Republican in a considerably more conservative part of the state, and Walls won both of his primary and seat completely unopposed. Saturn Girl, aggressive taxation, that sounds like pure Bolshevism. Why do you leftists have to get so violent? Glenn Beckett, my dad, I doubt you guys have seen this, but Indiana's lieutenant governor is truly brain dead. LMFAO, he's a Christian nationalist psychopath. He got on air and said with his whole chest that Muslim is a demonic death cult and that we're under the threat of Sharia law. Great. This guy is all right. Are we sure English is Shirley's first language, or does he sound even dumber in Spanish? Tennessee Sam, history repeats itself. Sam slightly got little glasses. I think that was ableist, lol, but for real, that's a future senator. Yeah. Bench Press Shapiro, if you want insane and inane drama to follow that isn't Haley Stevens, may I suggest going to Threads and typing in hot chef into the search bar? I don't
Not
have
on
threads.
I've somehow avoided, yeah.
Yeah. Tempe from Maryland, now that we are embracing dark woke, can we make fun of Haley Stevens' voice? Have we not been doing that the whole time?
I feel like I've been doing that for 6 months.
Yeah, exactly.
Nathan from Western Michigan, we need more volunteers to phone bank and canvas for Abdul. Please direct folks to go.abdulforsenate.com. Ben from Washington, why does Stevens sound like Jimmy Dore? She kind of does a little
Stephen
bit.
Stephen Miller?
Stevens.
Oh,
I mean, Midwest, right?
Right. Oh, is he from the... Right.
Chicago.
Gage from Utah, Freebie Friday. Nope. Bob Villain, that Haley Stevens accent is 100% Lynchian. I've already read that one. Emma's distant cousin, Decoration Day / Memorial Day was Monday, and I remember my dad is a disabled Vietnam vet telling me about the real origins. He also talked about when he was in Florida in the 1970s overhearing a shop owner say she wasn't closing for that goddamn Yankee holiday, and he just left. There's still parts of the South that hold that attitude.
What's the parts? Yankee holiday?
I think about Memorial Day.
That's really funny.
There's a Virginia school. There's a Virginia school that has the Confederate battle flag at their basketball games.
Yeah.
Glenn Howerton from Always Sunny graduated from Jefferson Davis High School.
Oh my God.
In Birmingham, Alabama.
Yeah, he's from Alabama?
Well, he's an Air Force brat.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah. Feminism. And Jillian Michaels is Gretchen Wieners, 100%. It's a disservice to Gretchen Wieners. Eve offline, flubbing when talking about Nick Shirley like he's spreading. Lesbians love majority. Nightmare blunt rotation. Nick Shirley, drunk Alex Jones, post-stroke Fetterman. All right, five more. Dr. Death, I don't believe your Hollywood excuse for Sam's absence today. He's really just having his third six-month comprehensive physical exam. I'm sure he got all A's. Dragon Rider, his best Cuba quote is, "The woman spawned out of nowhere when a person showed up near him on the street." Spawned like a video game. official Gen X. Hey, did you guys hear about the story about Israeli tourists taking over Thailand? There are Israeli investors that are illegally owning Thai businesses, but what's worse is that the Israeli tourists are playing guitar for other tourists asking for money. But the Thai government has sent the Israelis a formal list of complaints. Please look into this. Maybe. Snarkinorsky, my grandma and great-grandma used to call Memorial Day Decoration Day, and they were from rural South Dakota. Whoa. And the
There's some weird stuff in South Dakota. Yeah, go on.
No, and the final IM of the week. Crypt Bro. The administration is finally catching on to the idea that data centers and AI are unpopular. I spent most of the last year working on a report that showed AI growing to over 10% of U.S. electricity consumption. That report has been shelved because they don't want to add fuel to the fire and anger their donors. Yes, the electricity usage is crazy. Basically, we've been pretty much flat with energy consumption, but the commercial and business use that's driving it up is from these data centers, and it's really impacting people and our electricity bills and our prices.
What, do you want to lose to China?
Yeah. Pay more so we don't lose to China, folks. That is our show for the week. Thanks to Matt. Thanks to Brian. Thanks to Sam and everybody. Dorsey, Julie, Gino, everyone that's working on the show. Appreciate you all. We will see you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. Somewhere the choice is made for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. The sun shifted into view while I shifted in and out of.